Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
We have been doing this podcast now for over a year.
Yes, we have.
We have been marketing ourselves by The Queer Quadrant, and I just have one note. Do we drop the? Will it be cleaner? Will it be cleaner as just Queer Quadrant or The Queer Quadrant?
I think that is a great discussion to have. Wow, I can't believe that you surprised me with that, but Aha! You actually did.
Yeah. Is this the first time that I ever shocked you with an opening that wasn't so bad?
Maybe. I'd like to say no, but...
Follow-up question to that.
Okay.
Should this movie have been Social Network or the social network?
Ah, but see, in this case, I think the
is cleaner.
It is cleaner.
Right?
I agree.
Yeah, and
it
sort
it just
of
sounds very like official. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it gives it that importance. It's The Social Network. It's not
right.
A social network. It's not about social networking in general. It is the social
it's
network.
It should be like italicized. Social networks.
It
yes.
is. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this brings us to a thing with movies in general is that I find like movies that are the like X are always so hard to categorize because like if you're doing like your Blu-ray collection or whatever it may be, like do you include the
no.
when you're alphabetizing or do you not? Because I do the and then A, B, whatever it may be within the.
Okay.
Do you not?
No. Ayana, I don't know how
no,
you
how
feel
do you feel?
Do that. No.
Yeah.
See, it throws me off. Okay.
No. You have to go by like the library system or like the you know, the standard Dewey Decimal System, mm-hmm. which is articles such as A and the do not count.
So like, what about A Serious Man? Even though that's, that's an A.
Yeah. Hmm. So it's Serious Man, yeah.
I don't like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the proper way to do it if you want to get technical about it.
Well, I guess it's just chaos over here.
It is chaos. I can't believe that.
This apartment is a mess.
It's very difficult too, because like let's say you want to watch The Social Network, you have to go all the way to your T's and then you have to go to the S's in the T's.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's more
yes
work.
And
yeah, it just seems like more hassle.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to call David. We're going to talk about this. I'll get his opinion.
Mr. Fincher himself. Yeah, your close personal friend.
Yeah. He comes over all the time. We're famously really good friends.
The idea of... Jordan has a very nice apartment, but the idea of like
David
control
over.
Freak David Fincher coming into your apartment,
he
like he might drop dead.
What would you think about like my... like he would like come in and he sees like the Titanic poster. What do you think he would think?
I feel like he would appreciate the Titanic poster, but he might be a little upset that you don't have a Fincher film on your wall.
Mm.
I don't know.
That's true.
All I'm saying.
That's true. Wow, much to think about here.
Yeah. If you haven't guessed, hello.
Hello.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
And joining us today is film writer Ayana Murray. Ayana, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting.
Truly an honor to have you on.
And we're so excited that you chose, the greatest movie of all time to discuss with us.
Yeah.
2010's The Social Network.
The. A lot of the talk
social
here.
Network. It's like Megan the Stallion.
Mm-hmm.
The Social
Timothy
Network.
Timothy Chalamet. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It deserves that level of like
Should there be an extra
status.
E
yeah.
in the mm-hmm. social network? Yeah. Okay,
I
great.
So.
I'm glad that we got to the bottom
you
of this.
You can petition your close personal friend David Fincher to, to get
the,
it changed.
The re-release, right?
Right.
Yeah, release the cut. Sorry.
Do you know, they're actually like re-releasing The Social Network in 4K, which does not make sense to me because like, I feel like that's already like a high quality film. That doesn't
right.
need any more extra
I mean,
technical.
It is so clean.
Yeah. I think like the next re-release of this that I would like to see is like a Criterion.
I want just The Social Network 2, baby.
Yeah, because that would go over well.
I'm sure.
Well, it's going to be about Facebook being incredibly
the worst
successful.
Place in the world. Yeah.
And problematic and like
right.
the destroyer of democracy.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. I mean like... They kind of called their shot here. They were like, all right, this Zuckerberg guy, kind of terrible. He's going to change the world for sure, but not for good. And
yeah.
they were right. 10 years later, Facebook destroyed democracy.
Yes. Oh, wait. Okay. So I have to tell you, because we are like major losers at in 2020.
Yes, we are.
You remember this. In 2020, we were like, let's just the two of us get together and do a retrospective on like what we think the best films of the decade are. Just the two of us alone in Jordan's apartment having a fun night. And we each picked like a movie that we thought like summed up the 2010s the best. And I chose Mad Max Fury Road, but Jordan chose The Social Network. And I feel like it's really paid out in spades.
And then every article ever since had the same
was thing. Like The Social Network is the most relevant movie of the 2010s. But yeah, it's just, it continues to get more relevant.
It does. It does. Do you, what would you say is your, if you like had to do a number one of the 2010s, what would it be?
Oh my God.
The pressure's on.
That's too much pressure.
I know, that's like a whole decade to think about.
It is. Literally.
I was gonna say about The Social Network, like, I don't know if that's like the definitive film of the 2010s, because like, it's just like, that was Facebook in its infancy. Like, Facebook is so wildly different in 2019 than what it was in like 2003 or whatever it was set in. Like, it's just an entirely different beast that like, I can't say like The Social Network encapsulates this decade. I think like in regards to the internet, I suppose so, but like that's more of a, it's more of a biopic than like any statement on the internet. Yeah. It's a bit of like a tough film to crack.
I sort of agree. My thing was, I think it is like a searing portrait of like men online is sort of my view on it, and how it's like calling it shot upon like how men will react on the internet sort of for like 10 years now, and like how they'll just be like hurt by someone and then just immediately go online and just say whatever they want and like have like absolutely like really no repercussions for their actions.
Oh, yeah.
And like the way that like it changes like how like we communicate, and like in a way like social media will like influence how teenagers, college students, whatever it may be, like are able just to like say things without like giving a shit online, and just basically like how toxic things can become, you know? Because I really think it's like at the end of the day, it's not about a really good man. He's kind of a terrible person, you know?
He's not an asshole. He's just trying
so hard to
be
one.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that like, I mean, I love the conversation between Sean and Mark when Sean's like, I started Napster because, you know, there was this girl in high school who picked the captain of the football team because of me. The idea that like, you
know, will do anything to get with someone, including destroying the fabric of democracy.
Yes. But also the idea that like the internet became like a sort of dick measuring contest.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's good. It's a good movie.
I mean, I think especially with this movie, it's a dick measuring contest. I mean, the men in this movie are so self-obsessed with like themselves, specifically like Sean and Mark.
Ayana's nodding along. Yes.
But I think we'll dig into that, because I think like throughout, like we often will talk about like, are we going to talk about the plot with the movie or are we not? But like for this movie, it feels sort of integral, because every scene is kind of not only just a banger, but like fuels discussion in like terms of like what it's saying.
Yes.
From like the studio logos are, you know what I mean? Like for the minute, like the Rooney scene starts happening, like as the credits are rolling, you're like, oh, this is like one of the greatest things ever seen.
Yeah.
And like put on screen.
Yeah. It's great.
I was watching the director's commentary actually earlier today. And when the logo starts, David Fincher, he just starts saying like, oh, I actually wanted like the bar speak to play over the trailers, but like they wouldn't let me do that. And I just think that's like so amazing. I love that.
That would have been so iconic, because you just hear like muffling behind trailers. You're like, wait, what is that? Who is this? I watched the David Fincher commentary as well. What were your thoughts? Like, because I feel that it was interesting. I am a personal, my favorite of his is the Gone Girl one, just because I love how much he roasts Ben Affleck.
Same.
And everything. As like
Me
Ben
too.
Affleck's number one fan, I'm like, I enjoy this and I think that this is okay. But what were your like, did you have any big takeaways from watching the commentary? Or
I just like wrote down like the weirdly unhinged things that David Fincher said, like what was that bit you know, like the Jewish fraternity party, and then David Fincher is like, if you have a problem with this scene, go and email Aaron Sorkin. And then he just says his email and it's like a 10-second long beep. And like the commentary is like all like that, and it's so hilarious. I love it.
They bleep out like all his fucks and shits and everything like that, yeah. Which is so good. And you're just like, release the like free version. I want to hear what he's saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Like as well, at that lecture when he gets the little note and it says "you dick," and then I think he's insinuating that it was supposed to say the C word, but they wouldn't let him do it, and it is just like beep. So like I feel like that's even funnier than just like saying the actual word.
Right, because he was, yeah. Just like the studio was like, they needed me to keep it at a PG-13, not an R.
Okay, which is, this movie has two fucks and middle fingers in it, mm-hmm. And I have no idea how it's still a PG-13. Okay, you are allowed, wait, one fuck.
Where are the two fucks?
The two fucks are, this is how well I know this movie.
I love this.
Is when Sean has Mark be like intentionally late for that meeting, and it's, mm-hmm. Sean Parker says "fuck you," mm-hmm. and then he flips the double bird, and then of course, I'm sorry, my prod is at the cleaners, right, along with my, right, hoodie and,
oh,
my,
yeah,
fuck you flip flops,
you pretentious douche.
Well, maybe, yeah, like, yeah, fuck you flip flops. They were like, that's not necessarily just fuck. It's fuck you flip flops. You,
it's,
know,
like,
it's
a compound,
it's all, like,
word.
One word. It's a new word that they invented for the movie. I mean, the way that Garfield delivers it, I would say absolutely.
Where is the Oscar?
Where is his Oscar?
Just have one.
My man
question.
Deserves for this movie.
Specifically.
Yes.
Because, like, the audacity of him getting nominated for an Oscar for, I don't even remember the name of the
Mainstream?
Movie. No. The, God forbid. The movie where he plays a soldier. What is it called?
Oh,
Hacksaw Ridge.
There we,
wow,
go.
Whew.
Let's go.
That's a movie people have completely forgotten that.
Zero cultural impact.
Oh, wait, you're saying that people don't talk about that constantly on Twitter?
The Mel Gibson,
the
classic
hit film Hacksaw Ridge.
Like, it's so sad. He deserves it,
he
for
really
like 50 more performances,
I
than
mean,
fucking Hacksaw Ridge.
How do we all feel, one, about Mr. Garfield as an actor, as a person?
As a man. Because
for me, I
go,
let
for
me
it.
Tell you, hard eye emoji.
Oh,
for,
you love him.
Oh, absolutely. Whether it be just to look at, or to look at while acting,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I know you kind of have a soft spot for Spider-Man, too.
I think he deserved better material for those movies. My man wanted to be Spider-Man so bad, and then they just didn't give him the good scripts. And he's just, I feel like he embodies, like, the perfect, like, sort of lanky, awkward skinny boy that we all want to love, that's usually, like, problematic and, like, a little,
But he's,
but, like,
sweetheart.
He's the good version of it,
yeah,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel?
Yes.
Are you pro Gar? Are you on the train or no?
I'm very pro Garfield.
Love to say it.
I think, like, after seeing Mainstream, I think he should, like, take his career down the, like, unhinged Jake Gyllenhaal route, where he just takes, like,
yes,
wacko, like, character actor type stuff. That feels, like, really up his alley. And just, like, I think, like, he's done, like, some of his best stuff. Even at, like, people hate Mainstream, but like I really enjoyed like what he did in that film, and like Under the Silver Lake as well. That's a film I will defend until my dying day.
Here we go. Wow,
exactly. Like I just think he should stick to weird stuff, although if he ever got a role that was like as good as The Social Network, I would be all in. But currently his career is like out of place. I don't know, Hacksaw Ridge, that happened, and then yeah,
I
mean,
I feel like
that's
like, I wonder if this Tick Tick Boom will be like an Oscar play for him, because it really is like fascinating, because you have like how we've all seen like how In the Heights has been taken in, but then I feel like Tick Tick Boom will be like fascinating if people will like be on the Miranda train or off it, and then for him specifically,
I feel like people that are maybe not on the Miranda train would get on
for
Andrew Garfield. I don't know about that movie though. I don't know. I'm reserving any and all judgment until I see it, because I just don't know.
Yeah.
I am of course very solidly pro Andrew Garfield. I mean, look, the sort of like jokey internet thing regarding him in Spider-Man is that like Sony kicked him off because he was talking too much about like Spider-Man being gay, et cetera, et cetera, and how much he wanted it. It's like, you know, that's true to a certain extent, probably not, but it's true a little bit. So like, obviously we have to stan him for that reason alone. But I don't know. Well, okay. I don't know if I have like the internet crush on him that a lot of people do. I'm more like his craft, but he's not really my type. You know what I mean?
You're more of like a big hulky. Yeah. In this movie, you're more of like an Armie Hammer.
Yes.
Armie asterisk asterisk or arm asterisk 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 H asterisk asterisk.
Right. Exactly.
You like the other actor that's doing the body double for Armie.
Yes.
Josh
yes.
Pence.
There we go.
Let's go. Not to be confused with Josh Peck, which is,
of
I
course.
Was deeply confused.
That would be iconic if Josh Peck was in this.
But no, like, yes, Josh Pence slash, unfortunately, Armie Hammer. I mean,
I understand.
You know,
I feel like you had, I mean, Garfield is, I guess, a specific sensibility.
But like, he's perfect internet boyfriend material.
I mean, when he and Emma. Oh, that was, I mean,
that was like a perfect era that cannot be replicated.
Were they the greatest that we had?
Yeah,
like,
it
was that the best?
Broke my heart when they broke up. They
like, definitely more than Zach and Vanessa, for sure.
Oh, come on, please. we all knew that Zach and Vanessa was never gonna last.
I mean,
come
hey,
on now.
You yeah. never know.
No.
Like, are there, were they the definitive couple?
Of like our time.
Of our time. Or like our specific generation.
There's like Brangelina and then there's Stonefield.
I mean.
That's what we get. Yeah. No, I would say there's a case to be made. I don't know. There's the whole idea that like, blah, blah, blah. The movie star is dead. You know, celebrities don't do interesting things anymore because they're too worried about PR or what have you. Like, that is a whole can of worms that we will have to open another time. But like, that was like a public celebrity relationship that people were very into.
Like into, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like after the Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson disaster. So I feel like people had backed off a little bit of being like, let's just let them be cute in public, which was good. I don't know. It was a good time.
It was a good time for all of us.
Iona understands. As someone with your finger on the pulse of the internet, you understand.
Yeah. Do you think there's like a couple right now that's at the same level? Like, I literally cannot think of anyone off the top of my head.
Yeah. You know what? I think that a lot of the people that are high profile are very like publicly not dating anyone. I think of Tom Holland, of course, who is kind of like perpetually single, or Zendaya, who like, I feel like if Zendaya was dating someone, oh my god,
like we would know,
like it would be everywhere. But she's not, and I feel like that's kind of like the zone that you need, because you need like the just like the crazy fandom,
right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing would be like if those two start dating,
yeah,
then that would be like,
if they'd be pulling a Stonefield, let's tell you.
That would be a mess is what that would be. We do not need that on our hands.
Yeah.
Hey guys, it's Jordan. I just wanted to say that at the time of the recording, we did not see the photos of Zendaya and Tom Holland being together. And we just have to make an amendment that we do now, in fact, have a modern day couple of the generation. The Spider-Man curse strikes again. We apologize for our previous statements on Mike, and you know, it just goes to show that we willed this into the universe before the time of recording. All right, enjoy the episode.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of like YouTuber and like TikTok drama, but like, I don't
know. Shutting it, not good social media. Then again, is any social media good?
A question that this
movie poses.
Okay. Should we talk about our first experiences
with
this movie? Because I feel like this came out at a very pivotal time for a lot of us. The time where, at least for me specifically, I was still kind of like figuring out what social media was.
And you were just starting to watch movies for the first time. For context, Brooke had only seen 5 movies growing up. So, like, this is a part of the era where she starts to see more. Like, the 2010s were long.
So funny, Jordan.
I'm sorry.
So funny.
I have to let our guests know the history.
I did see this movie a lot as a kid, though, because so my dad travels a lot for work. And like, so he would come home and be like, oh, I saw this movie in a hotel room at like 2 a.m. And like the 30 minutes that I saw of it were pretty good. We should put it on. That's how I was introduced to Down with Love.
Oh,
can you
gosh.
Believe?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I mean, you could put that movie on any point and it'd be good.
Well,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
But it's the same goes for The Social Network. So I think this was my father traveled and brought this movie home and was like, we should
That's
watch this.
Wild.
And I mean, it's the good best movie ever. It's a very, like, you know, children's appropriate movie. I have a younger sister who was like 10 when this came out. So it's like, you know, you can watch it with the whole family, more or less. It's, there's nothing too crazy. And so, yeah. And I mean, then it's just
that's so wild.
Became a staple. I definitely went through like a Social Network phase in college where I was like, yeah, I mean, we all think that The Social Network is a masterpiece, right? And like, I can quote the whole thing, blah, 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 blah. Like, I think I leaned a little too hard into it.
It became like your personality a little bit.
But I've backed off since then.
Well, I think this ties into your relationship with Sorkin, which we can double back to.
I don't know. I like Sorkin.
No, I agree. I think it's an interesting thing because I feel like him in this movie is a sticky web, you know?
Right. Where it's like,
if we're talking about Andrew Garfield,
this movie, speaking of sticky webs, this movie gave Sorkin like a little bit of like a blank
carte
check.
Blanche, yeah.
Yeah. To be like, I can do anything. I am the greatest screenwriter in the world.
Have Molly have a game.
I like Molly's game. Ayana, I have to ask before we jump back into it, how do you feel about Molly's game?
About Molly's game?
Yeah.
That's a movie that I've not thought about since it came out.
Correct
I
take.
See it in the cinema.
Fine. Correct so take. I'm the only person that thinks that movie's good. I'll live with it. I understand. I really like that movie. I don't know why. I think it's
because
good.
She has a game. You really like that she has a game.
I think she's a fascinating character. I like that. Sure. Okay. The whole like thematic of her dad being like, you're addicted to like having power over shitty men. I was like, yeah. Like, I get that.
I understand
that. I don't know. I like competitive women.
Yeah.
I like women with obsessive tendencies.
Oh, really? You do?
Yeah, I do. Mm. That's like shocker. 90% of my film days.
I mean, that's just like Jessica Chastain films.
Yes. She loves.
I mean, that's her brand. Not gonna lie, like
she loves a girl with obsessive tendencies.
I mean, that's like all of what Tammy Faye is hinging on is like how obsessed can Jessica Chastain be in like religion?
And we're tying it all back to Andrew Garfield. Look at us go!
Oh my god! Wow, we love art. Okay, my relationship. I'll go is that I remember this trailer coming out and being obsessed, which we've talked about on mic before because Brooke. You don't get to 500 million friends without making a few enemies, of course. And like the poster I thought was iconic. And the trailer, of course, the second trailer, Social Network trailer 2, is 52 seconds of I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo.
Yeah.
What the hell? Like of just then that in like photos of just like random social media profiles. And then it gets to actual footage from the movie, which I feel like is like a huge slapping your dick on the table move for a trailer. Just be like half of the trailer is actually not footage from the movie.
Yes.
Like you're going to like it that much. So I don't know. How old was it? What was this?
2010. How? So you were 14, 15, 14
yeah,
or 15.
Sure.
Perfect age for this movie to come out.
Yeah. But this is, I feel like Facebook is hitting its stride for especially like my generation. Like everyone's on Facebook. I'm getting on Facebook and I'm like, wow, a movie about Facebook. Let's check it out. And I saw this in theaters. I want to say like with my mom or with my aunt. Like I saw it with an older woman family member. I forget which.
Great, John. Thank you.
The mall. No, at the like local, my small like local. I like remember where I sat during this movie in the small theater, which was my favorite theater growing up. And it was truly a transcendent experience because it was just like, oh, this is one of the greatest things ever. And then also growing up with Disney Channel, I was like, oh my God, Brenda Song
pop
fucking off.
That was my thing too. Seeing Brenda Strong, it fucked me up.
Right? I mean, like, does she not steal this movie? She's, like, is she the low-key MVP?
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's so good in this.
In my last Letterboxd review of the film that when I logged it today, I said that, like, Brenda Song should have been a movie star after this film. Like, why has that not happened?
She should have. Literally, her career, she has, like, one Disney Channel original, right? And then, what has she done? She marries Macaulay Culkin. Like, good for her.
Good
but,
for
like,
them.
I don't know what else. Like, she deserved something.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I think it's being in Disney.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to escape the clutches.
But you would have thought, like, Vanessa is around the same thing, and she sort of has like the Spring Breakers, and now she's sort of in her pocket of like Netflix rom-coms and stuff.
Well, I think the difference is that Vanessa Hudgens is not a good actress, and Brenda Song
is a good actress.
A good actress.
But But she doesn't do anything after this.
She was in this, she was in like kind of a hacky Netflix movie called Secret Obsession, which is apparently kind of a fun time. So maybe she's about to have like a B movie comeback. I don't know.
But like, you could have seen her like lead a show or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, she should have had something off of this.
We can single-handedly bring her back. We can push the Brenda song stan agenda.
I agree.
Yeah,
but I mean, just she's in three or four scenes maybe, but like two of them are so iconic. Like her burning while Andrew's on the phone is like one of the greatest things ever.
Silicon Valley sluts. I mean, the
I'm so scared of her.
The Appletini scene. What is
right?
Okay, I'll just say Sorkin has a thing with Appletinis because apparently
are they in Molly's Game?
They are in Molly's Game. One of the gangsters orders an Appletini, and I was like, "What is this?" But what makes it even weirder is that in this movie, like Mark Zuckerberg in an interview was like, "I never had an Appletini, and then I saw this movie, and I was like, I guess I should get one," which means that it's a Sorkin added detail, and it's a good detail to add. But I was
have
like,
"Have you ever
what
had
are
an Appletini?"
Odds. No, have you?
I have not.
No.
Is it gin or is it vodka?
Let's find out. Do we all? I think the thing is, we'll go get Appletinis after this and it'll be a great old time.
I've kind of always wanted to try one because of this movie.
Okay, here we go. An Appletini is a cocktail containing vodka and one or more of apple juice, apple cider, apple liqueur, or apple brandy.
Okay, that sounds good. And it comes with like an apple in it. They have like something in this movie where it kind of looks like an olive, and I was like, that looks disgusting. But I do think it's just like vodka and apple.
Yeah, like a martini. Yeah,
the sugar content alone. Wow, I can't even.
Okay. Anti-apple teenies.
I don't know, but I do want to try one. I feel like I have to know.
I do. Yeah, we'll try them. How about you? What was your personal experience with this movie? Like, how did you come to it? What was your first watch? Or
see, I don't really like distinctly remember the first time I watched it, like as a whole.
So you're a normal person.
Yeah,
this is good.
We're just crazy.
But the thing, like, I do have like childhood memories. So like the film came out when I was like 12 years old, and I didn't see it in the cinema, obviously, because I was a child, and and so I didn't really hear about it until like it was just on TV. And I think it was like the morning before school. I was one of those people that would wake up like 3 hours before school because I was like nervous that I'd be late, even though like that was never gonna happen. So
I feel you. I feel you.
So I had like 2 hours until I had to leave to go to school, and I was like, "Oh, The Social Network's here. Okay, I guess I'll watch that." And then I saw Brenda's song, and I was like, "Oh my god, it's her from Sweet Life, that show I watch currently because I'm 12 years old."
Oh, hey, and then, a great show.
Yes, and then the scene where like she gives Andrew Garfield a blowjob in the bathroom, I was like, "Oh my god, what?" What's going on here? My poor child eyes, like, it's like scarred.
What a way to be introduced.
You're like, oh, Brenda, she's gonna be like this nice, like, rich suburbanite, like, right? Like she is in the show. Oh my god.
Yeah.
it was an experience that I've clearly never forgotten. But like after that scene, I literally think I just like stopped the movie there. I was like, okay, this is an adult movie. This is not for me. and then eventually when I was like 15, 16 or whatever, and I was like getting into film properly, like I put it on this film that scarred me as a child, and I was like, oh, this is actually a masterpiece. Okay, I get it now. This is like the best film of all time.
Yes. Correct.
It's a good arc.
It's a good story.
I mean, it's true. Like, you don't expect Brenda to come into this movie looking like she does, but
she does.
She does. I will say, my god, gorgeous as well.
She's great. I love her in this.
She's so good. I read that apparently Disney tried to stop her doing the film or something. That
oh
might not
shit!
Be true.
Really?
I just saw a headline,
Disney,
but
I mean,
I would believe it. Disney's literally the worst. Like, they're so insane about like policing their talent.
Well, it's
and like
it
protecting
was.
Your brand.
It's like so
image.
Different now, which is so wild.
Right.
So, like, if you look at like Olivia Rodrigo, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would have been like shut down in like a second.
Right.
Versus
like the Miley Cyrus, like juggernaut of like pop stardom. But yeah, I mean. Yeah, they're like notoriously very controlling. I think like a huge chunk of like why so many of the people that are quote unquote movie stars, like we were saying earlier, are usually like have their foot in at least one Disney property. And it is sort of like very much like they have to be so conscious about their public image. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's, I think that's one of the reasons you don't see like celebrity chaos as much anymore, because it is this sort of like very controlling.
Well, everything's very tame
thing.
Now.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it's the idea is like, if you as a celebrity are in this property, you're like an extension of the brand and not right. like your own person.
Which would you say is a part of and product of social media?
Oh, absolutely. Because there's like, you know, this is like the movie that strips, or this is like the period of time, I guess, is like portrayed in this movie that strips away like a huge chunk of privacy.
Oh my God,
that
yeah.
people had.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, I think that's sort of too, like why this movie was like sort of saying how ahead Facebook would, because it's like the whole like crux of this movie was like stealing data and like putting these private things online for like other random strangers just to like critique and look at and like judge.
Right. And it all begins with FaceMatch. Yeah. Like that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why like this has, that has to be the inciting incident for this film, because that is what catches the Winklevi's attention. But like
the Winklevi,
yeah, it's sorry. So smart. I'm not going to even acknowledge that. It's so smart to start with like, how does it feel to like have a girl reject you and then get revenge by, you know,
blogging about
objectifying other women yeah. like on the internet yeah. and like have that make you the youngest billionaire in the world.
Awful.
Very
awful.
Good movie. Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to keep saying it.
I think what you were saying, like there's like those comparisons online, which draws back to like the first rejection of like, they have like the Citizen Kane structure for this movie where like Rooney Mara is the Rosebud.
Oh, because I they, was like the what?
Rooney, she's the Rudy Bud, as we all know. So like you open with her and then the film ends, of course, like with him just like refreshing her Facebook page. And it has sort of that same like rise of an empire, you know,
yeah,
structure,
well,
superstructure to it.
He can never, like, he's the youngest billionaire in the world. And despite what he says, if I wanted to, I could, like, buy the Phoenix and turn right. it into my ping pong room. Like, despite all of what he can do, he still can't get.
Like, get over it.
He still can't get a girl to friend him.
No.
And, like, yeah. that's poetry and maybe, right there.
Maybe it's because he's closeted.
No, okay. No, I think that's a straight up bad take.
I'm joking.
But that is a very good segue to talk about
it.
The cultural legacy yes. of this movie, which I feel like has just become more relevant. And there have been some very good articles in the past, as well as like, you know, clips from this movie crop up every now and then. And like one of the cultural staying results of this movie has been the ship of Mark and Eduardo.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know what their like portmanteau ship name is.
Mawardo,
maybe. Which Edwark? Is very bad.
Edark. That's good. Eddard Stark. Great.
I think.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Sounds like a Game of Thrones name.
Yeah.
Safferberg is probably better.
Safferberg?
You do the yeah. last names. Mm, yeah.
That
yeah.
is actually pretty good.
But
hopefully
like,
the Titanic doesn't go into it.
Because.
It's a Safferberg.
Okay. Jordan, sorry. You're really batting zero
sorry.
On jokes
that one was
today.
Pretty good. I'm sorry. I take it back.
But I think that this, and Ayana, I know you'll be able to offer some color here. Is there certain movies that like, yeah, you know, you end up shipping people from them for one reason or another. But there's like a specific sect of movies and TV shows where like the relationship between two young, attractive men is close enough that like the internet just kind of rises up and is like, we must ship them together. It's like the perfect combination of them having like no long-lasting female relationships, being close enough friends that it feels intimate, and three, being able to like project an aspect of yourself
for sure
onto the shipping. It's very complicated, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. I just couldn't name any examples. I literally couldn't think of anything on the top of my head, but I know I've done it like repeatedly over the years, but my mind isn't an empty page. I cannot tell you.
No. But it's a very common phenomenon, and it's like it's so common that it's like you could have like a TV show where there's like a canon lesbian couple and a canon gay couple, and the most popular ship in like the general internet fandom will still be the two one. Straight guys.
I agree.
Yes.
Well, like, I think there was an article about it that I was reading where they were talking about like how we've talked about this. It's like you either like for queer portrayals in movies, they're either like super perfect or like everything terrible is happening to them or they're terrible. Like there's no real portrayal of queer people where they're just like a person, you know, which queer people are. It's a wild thing. But like then a lot of like these shippings and fandoms, like people and like queer like shipping will latch onto the straight couple or like these two straight friends because you're able to graft, as you were saying, like your own feelings or like your own sense of normalcy onto them where they're just normal people and you're like, great, I ship them because I'm able to like see a normal portrayal of queerness instead of something that is just so like inherently flawed or problematic or something. You know what I mean?
Right. It's also, it's very, very hard to get away from the idea that like canon queer characters have like a certain level of pandering to them. And like the more popular the property, usually like the worse the pandering is. And so it's like, you know, that is another big reason why I think that people sort of shy away from that and be like, okay, I mean, they're cute, I guess, but they're not really three-dimensional. They like exist to serve like the specific niche, and so it's like you want to go for the characters that are like the most fully realized. I have to say, I went on the famous fanfic website Archive of Our Own because I know what that this because look a lot of
I
movies
did this too.
Wait, did you actually
to see how many Eduardo Mark fanfictions there are?
Yes. There are, I mean, look, there's 2,100 like fics in total, and Eduardo Saverin slash Mark Zuckerberg make up 1,700 of those. I can't imagine what the other 300 are. It's probably just like a regular fic about The Social Network because those exist too. But like
Winklevi and Divya.
No.
There's someone. There's got to be someone.
Oh, I mean, I think we'll discuss this because you were saying you had an Armie Hammer thing. I think we'll get into that because, yes.
Yeah.
I think Armie Hammer has a sexual chemistry with himself in this movie.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? Like, kind of just, like, looks like he wants to, like, get himself off. But
that's very interesting. Yes. There are some wild pairings on here. I think my favorite, you know, crossovers are very popular in the fanfic world. I guess my personal favorite on here is Eduardo Saverin and Lex Luthor (DCEU) because he's a Jesse Eisenberg character.
I hate that.
Yeah,
I hate that.
That is very common.
Do you think Zack Snyder would direct that?
Yes. No question. But like a lot of the movies that we talk about, we're sort of like projecting our own, for lack of a better word, ship onto it. But sometimes we get lucky and cover a film such as this one where like the internet has already like given us a take, which is exciting. And like this, like there's a pretty solid fandom that likes these two boys being together. Yeah.
I think it was like really big on Tumblr around like 2011 because I know someone who was in that fandom at that time. So,
you can say if like, it was you, we understand.
It wasn't me. It wasn't me. I was a child. I told you. I was scarred.
Oh, right.
Of course.
You were getting far away from the Tumblr fanfic of the movie, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was very popular. Andrew Garfield was a big Tumblr boy back in the day between this and The Amazing Spider-Man. And he was, I can't believe I know this. Like, this is despicable. He was a common fan cast for the Mystery Harry Potter Marauders prequel series that like Tumblr collectively tried to get off the ground for like 5 years. It obviously never did, but he was like the fan cast.
I mean, in a different world, he plays Newt Scamander, the hit character from the Fantastic Beasts world, you know?
Yeah. I mean, let's just all thank our lucky stars that if he was up for that role, he didn't take it.
I mean, he could have been like,
he could have done it, but I don't think it would have been
thinking like he could have been like gay He could have been Grindelwald or whatever. I don't fucking know. I'm trying to throw him into some sort of wizard thing.
No, it would never happen.
No.
No.
Ayana, what was your... So, like, do you ship these men? What's your... I guess, like, because we're kind of here talking about them. Like, what do you have, like, while rewatching it? Because for me, I guess, like, while I had seen the movie... God knows how many times I've seen this movie or, like, read the script or whatever. But, like, I never sort of went in to watch with the queer mindset. Like, I knew that Eduardo and Mark, they're like, I understood that there was sort of that baseline, but then rewatching this time, I was like, oh, this is just like a breakup movie between the two
boys. That's my thinking as well. Yeah. I was watching it like through the lens of like, this is like a breakup movie where we're just like seeing like the trajectory of the relationship, and it's just like a tragedy, basically. The first time they're together, like in the same scene, when Eduardo shows up to Mark's dorm, and then Mark's like, Eduardo, I need you. And then Eduardo says, I'm here for you. And then Mark says, no, I just need your algorithm or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that encapsulates so much about the relationship, like how Eduardo's just willing to do anything for Mark, but Mark's just not seeing like how much Eduardo cares for him. He's just like so self-absorbed in his own like mission, basically.
Yeah,
like totally. it's actually like pretty, it's pretty sad, like their dynamic.
I really feel heartbreaking for Eduardo. Oh
yeah.
My god, yeah,
it's so heartbreaking. Like Eduardo is such a sweetheart, like he wears his heart on his sleeve. I mean, I think it is hilarious that they were like, notable nerd Andrew Garfield, like come on. But like the idea is that he's supposed to be just
like
as
the business angle, though.
He's just as nerdy as Mark. He has just like as terrible luck, like with women, with popularity. That's why like him getting punched by the Phoenix is like such a huge deal. And so it's like the two of them are really like the only people that they have in the world. Okay. And like it really is, you're watching their relationship fall apart. I mean, it's so that final 0.03% scene.
Oh my god.
Where Eduardo's like, I was your friend. I was your only friend, is like so gutting. And I think Andrew Garfield plays him as like a very open and honest guy, which helps. And yeah, it's just like that's everything that like is emotionally riding on this movie is riding on the relationship between the two of them. You don't, you know, Rooney Mara is doing fine. She doesn't need this bitch. Like, she's fine.
5 minutes of 5 minutes of screen time and steals the movie. But,
Brenda Song is doing great. She's going around burning things. Like, there's not a more authentic relationship in the movie besides the one between Mark and Eduardo. And like, it's gorgeous. Yeah. I mean,
it's like you were saying how like the 0.03%, but it's basically like Facebook sort of acts as like a surrogate child for the two of them. It's like born out of their relationship, and it's like, you have like the father or the mother, whatever maybe. It's like these two dads taking care of this kid, and in the end, it's like a divorce litigation between the two of them. It's like, who's going to get like
who's getting custody
of the child? And it's like,
I never thought about it like that. Wow. Literally,
right? And it's like Eduardo gets to see the kid like one day on one weekend for 1 month of the year, and like that's all he gets. Where Mark like has like complete control of everything. It's awful.
Yeah, there's a great article on Adolescent by Kaya Shuntia. Kaya, I'm so sorry if I mispronounced your name, but it's sort of like a reckoning with like how The Social Network has become a queer classic in the last 10 years.
Yes.
And it cites like a lot of the things that we've talked about, where it's like, this is like a couple of guys that are like primed for shipping. And also it's like the movie is very angsty about their relationship, because it's essentially like we said, it is a breakup movie, but there's also the idea of Mark like trading Eduardo in for like a shinier new model with Sean Parker, who then breaks his heart.
And you see the jealousy Eduardo has. Like, he's immediately just like, why are you starting to get like with this man? I like know that he's a bad person. I've flagged that he's a bad person, but you're still in love with that. He's like this dumb blonde idiot.
It's a toxic relationship, okay? It's a love triangle.
I mean, like, I love... like the casting of this movie is so brilliant too, because Justin Timberlake, I think that really David Fincher, God, king of casting, because he gets sort of how icky Justin Timberlake is as a person, and like casting him as Sean Parker, you're like, You are a slime ball, and I hate you.
Terrible.
That was just really great, like, foreshadowing to the current reckoning of Justin Timberlake, as if we aren't always reckoning Justin Timberlake.
Right.
Okay, wait, let me tell you. So this was the thing I was going to say about Armie Hammer, is that people can talk about canceled movies all that they want, but this is secretly like an extremely canceled movie as far as people involved go, because
the opening credits, like, yeah, it's just like everyone is like, yeah, it is not aged well.
A Scott Rudin, Kevin Spacey 1-2 punch in the credits. And then they jump to cast and are like, oh, phew, we're out of the woods. Boom, Armie Hammer. Boom, Justin Timberlake. It's like, it's so bad. It's uber canceled. We have to cancel across the board. David Fincher, great. We're on thin ice.
He's not canceled.
No, I would be so sad if David Fincher got canceled. But also, you know, if it has to happen, then it has to happen. But I love David Fincher. I just want to say quickly, you were talking about casting. Another a David Fincher thing that I have been trying to think about, and Ayana, maybe you can help me here, is like, I feel like he really likes nepotism casting. And I'm not
Is this a lead to Dakota Johnson?
Yes. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like, people that pop up in his movies where I'm like, why did you cast this person? Like, 9 times out of 10, it's like a nepotism thing. Yeah, yeah. And I think that he does it because he's such a guy that's like, I like to cast actors that like are kind of like the characters, you know, like I feel like he casts very well in that regard. And I think that, yeah, I don't know, like between Mank with Lily Collins and this with Dakota Johnson, and I was trying to think about like Panic Room with, I mean, like, it's sort of different because like Jodie Foster was a child star, but like, yeah, he likes to pull these people that sort of like have these very specific backgrounds and are like comfortable in showbiz, and like 9 times out of 10 the reason that they're comfortable is because
they kind of grew up around it.
Yeah.
Is Kristen Stewart a nepo baby?
I don't think so, but she was a child star.
Yeah
I remember
she was in Catch That Kid, of course.
Catch That Kid, man. And then obviously Panic Room. But no, I think that she is like just like a straight up child actor.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
and
we hope. Here's hoping. But like, even like Emily Ratajkowski in Gone Girl. Like, he likes to pluck people and be like, you are this person, and like, you're very comfortable on my set as well.
Right.
So there you go.
But like, it makes sense. Like, the Dakota Johnson casting, she doesn't, you're like, you see and you're like, oh right, now it's, wow, it's Dakota Johnson. But even at the time, she was like at the beginning of her career.
Yeah.
So like, when she pops up, I completely fucking forgot that it's Dakota Johnson.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, because this is like pre-50 Shades, pre-everything.
Yeah, I think that like, once 50 Shades popped, people would go back and watch this and be like, oh shit, it's Dakota Johnson. And now, of course, like, she's so mega. Yeah.
The thing is, like, about that scene as well, even though she's in it for like 2 minutes, like, she really like steals those 2 minutes. Like, it's a really, it's just like a really memorable role, even despite how brief it is. And like, say what you want about Dakota Johnson, but she's like so talented and like,
yeah,
I like, she's so great even for like such a tiny role like that.
It's like the specific kind of humor I think you have to cast her in, sort of that like knowing kind of dryness, I feel like, where she really works. Mm-hmm. Like, really, like, the Ellen bit is like her humor distilled, really.
Yeah.
Like, that's like where you want to cast her, in that pocket. You know what I mean?
Exactly. She does best when she's cynical. She doesn't play ingenue very well. And yeah, I mean, it's nice to see her pop up, because obviously, like, we all know that she can carry a movie, but I think that she does, like, she can almost have more impact if she's just there for like one scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Specifically, I mean, this one full of good limited scene performances.
I mean,
as we've discussed,
I'm obsessed with Sorkin's cameo in this movie. Oh, as an ad exec.
He's like, guys, what's going on here?
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's the perfect, like, and it's like the cameo of the movie too. I guess, like, I don't know, maybe if you wanted to have someone play Bill Gates.
The Bill Gates impersonator.
Yeah.
The one who stands out for me, if we're just talking casting, is the Joseph Mazzello, the guy who was in he was in Bohemian Rhapsody. He was Tim in Jurassic Park.
Is
like the really
he,
young boy.
Is
He's
he Dustin?
Dustin. Yeah. Every time I see his, he is that thing where I'm like, every time I see your face, I'm like, I know you from something. I like you as an actor, but I can never like remember his name. So in this one specifically, like he doesn't really do anything for the whole movie. He's just sort of like existing in it. But I'm always just like, you're doing your job. You're a nice character actor. Get your check. I support you.
He's good in this movie.
I mean, he's fine. Better than Bohemian Rhapsody. Yeah.
I like when Mark lands the little like dart in his drink.
Incredible. I mean, that whole like opening sequence is so good.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, there's too much to talk about. There really is too much to talk about because every scene is so iconic and every like portion of what makes this movie great, like deserves its own treatise. So I think like maybe we should just start talking about like production and plot and see
where it takes us. Yeah. So based off the book, The Accidental Billionaires, as we know,
best
classic.
Adapted screenplay win.
Truly.
Scale Mr. Sorkin.
Should have gotten more, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
I think really is like, I would be so fascinated to, well, I think the thing is like you sort of see with Steve Jobs and you see with sort of these other biopics that pop up after this movie, what like another director's hand would be. But I feel like you really need Fincher for this movie and sort of his like obsessive, like perfectionist style, like the way that he's able, obviously, like we'll talk about it with like Army and stuff, but like the way that he weaponizes like the VFX and the way that he like shoots everything like so precisely like a goddamn clock is, I feel like, what makes this movie tick. Because it could be like a boring drama, like rote sort of biopic, but the way in which it like everything sort of like works and like the way that he uses like Atticus and like the Reznor music, like the way like propels, like everything about it is just so precise, which is like how neurotic he is.
Yeah,
you know,
and it makes sense. And I also think like I think we can all agree that like the Sorkin Fincher like powers combined on this movie is like a huge part of what makes it so special. But like this is my favorite movie or, you know, piece of writing that Sorkin has ever done, including Molly's Game.
For sure.
So there you go. But
tough competition.
I know. I think it works really well because everyone is a dick in this movie. Like literally everyone is a dick except for Wardo.
Right.
And like Sorkin writes best when everyone is an asshole.
Yes.
Because everyone has to be so fucking smart and self-assured and throwing zingers at each other. And like I feel like we saw it recently with Trial of the Chicago 7, where it's like, why are people making like buzzy quips? Like they're a bunch of dry lawyers and like, you know, anarchists.
It's like channeling sort of what
this is not. Yeah. This does not feel accurate, but like it's perfect for this movie because everyone in this movie thinks that they're the smartest person in the room,
right?
And
well, like Mark, when he like stands up and he's like, I deserve recognition from the board, and they're like,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like what part of that was confusing?
Can you repeat that? Like, which part?
Self-assured little twat. Like what?
A twat? It's twat.
Twat, whatever.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Twat is how we say it in the UK. So just saying.
Thank you.
It's allowed.
Maybe it was my New England upbringing. See?
So that we're closer. You say this like I wasn't also brought up in New England.
No lies on Mike.
Uh-huh. But yeah, like I think that is one of the reasons, one of the many, many reasons why this movie is so good.
No, I agree.
Because everyone has to be trying to outdo everyone else. And Sorkin writing is just constantly trying to outdo himself through every character on the page. It's best when he's writing about educated, annoying, pretentious people.
Yeah.
I think, like, as well, if Molly's Game and Trial of Chicago 7 have proved anything, is that, like, Sorkin needs a great director, and he is not the director that can handle his writing. And I feel like The Social Network with, like, Fincher and Sorkin is, like, such a perfect marriage of the two. And just, like, those two people collaborating is part of what makes The Social Network so great, I feel like.
Yes. Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, Fincher, like, I will stand for Fincher any day of the week. I need to, like, hurry up and get a new favorite director because I, like, cannot tell people that my favorite director is David Fincher. Like, I
think
just.
You can.
No, I really can't.
Is it too, like, film bro for you?
Exactly.
You, like, have the Fight Club poster on your wall.
And also, it's truly, like, it's the same energy as being, like, I don't know, who's your favorite director? Oh, like, I think Christopher Nolan is really interesting. Like, nobody, let alone the film industry, wants to hear that David Fincher is your favorite director. But he is my favorite
director. I think that's fine. I think it's, like, I mean, I love him, and I think that's fine to love him.
But it's like you, if someone was like, Jordan, who's your favorite director? You'd be like, Jonathan Demme, yeah. Spike Jones. Like, I don't know. If someone asked you who your favorite director was, what would you say?
Oh, my God.
Fincher.
I mean, I do love Fincher. I love every single film he's made. I'm trying to think of like a genuine answer.
It's hard.
I've decided to get really into Paul Verhoeven. I also think that if Patty Jenkins makes like two more movies, I can be like, yeah, Patty Jenkins is my favorite director. I'm sorry, I like Patty Jenkins. Excuse you.
I think my favorite director is Wong Kar Wai, but I feel like that sounds so much worse than being a film bro, just being like, yeah, my favorite director is Wong Kar Wai. You might not have heard of him. He's made In the Mood for Love, you know?
No, I think this is good. Like, that's like taste.
One of the greatest movies ever made. Yeah. You know?
The thing is that, like, David Fincher is obviously an incredible director, but the reason that I love him so much is because it's not because of, like, the film bro thing. So I feel like
I think he channels energy that you exhume.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank
Sorry.
You.
I think there's like a different vibe from someone who says like, oh, my favorite Fincher film is like The Social Network or Gone Girl, to someone who's like, my favorite David Fincher film is Fight Club.
Right.
Like, those are two very different people. So.
And I think it's to unpack that too. Is like, this is all of this is like social media and how like the internet like has warped us being afraid to like say who our favorite directors are,
and not even in like a sucks. Ooh canceled right. type way, just in like a well, like, I feel like I could be better that. Than that.
You're
yeah.
saying film Twitter is a little cesspooly and awful at times,
maybe like a little toxic every now and then.
But on that point, like even with Fight Club, it's like, as we were talking off mic about this, and how I feel like this movie and Fight Club have like sort of similar themes, and how they're both sort of about like lonely, sad men who like rage at society through like unhealthy means. And there's also like a little bit of male love in there.
Yeah.
And you can have your read of like that movie and be like, I like this movie for X, Y, and Z. And if you say that, then it's like, oh, okay. But then other people will be like, you like Fight Club. What a like lame thing. And it's like, well, like, or like for this movie, or like, I think The Social Network is a great movie, and people could be like, why? Like, well, like, you know what I mean? But like, there's a lot to like and unpack about certain things. Just because you like one movie for a different reason doesn't mean that it's like a bad reason. Long story short,
I think it's okay for you
to like David Fincher as your favorite director.
Thank you.
I support you.
Thank you so much. I really needed your approval.
You and 99 Take King.
Yeah. Look, I think that obviously there's all the stories about David Fincher being like extremely meticulous and like very punishing as a director. But like, we were mentioning the audio commentaries. He seems like a really chill guy.
Funny guy.
Maybe not chill. Yeah. But he seems like he has a really good sense of humor. And obviously I've never been on the set of a Fincher film, but I think a lot of people, like Armie Hammer, talks about like how he had to do like 98 takes of eating a burger in this movie. Or like, I remember Carrie Coon in the French fries from Gone Girl, where David Fincher is like, oh, I should have told you that you should never eat anything when you're on set with me, because like it's just a terrible idea. Like, I feel like he kind of is transparent about it and like has a good attitude about it, which is good. And it's like, you know, you kind of know what you're signing up for.
He's exacting, but in a way that like, you know it. So
he seems like he's not a dick. Yeah. He's very meticulous, but yeah.
Did you keep up with like award season, and like every time David Fincher lost an award, he would like take a shot?
Yes. Iconic.
That made me so happy, because like, again, it's that sort of like same energy where it's like, you get the feeling that David Fincher is on the other side of that Zoom being like, if I win best director over like two women and like in this historic year, like I am not gonna know what to do with myself. So every time he took a shot, he was like, thank God, like I don't need it, it's fine.
That's like a victory shot.
Yeah, exactly.
More than a like a commiseration shot.
It's absolutely an honor just to be nominated. I mean, it was just iconic nonetheless.
I can't imagine. Look, I don't, maybe I might hate Mank more than other people. I think it might be my like least favorite legitimate Fincher movie. I don't know how much you want to count like Alien 3.
I like Alien 3.
Yeah, I mean, I
maybe that's my hot take.
Yeah, but like I can't stand Bank. I'm sorry. Like I just can't imagine him winning for that and being like, wow, the honor, like the prestige.
Well, he should have won.
Like
the thing
my
is, he
magnum
won for this
opus
movie.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about it. We'll get there.
Because he doesn't have a Best Director Oscar, right? No.
Don't think so.
No. I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think we should. Should we start to move towards the plot?
Yeah, we're doing terrible at this. every sequence of this movie is amazing. I think what's really exciting is that the first 20 minutes are like totally electric. As we mentioned, the conversation that starts over the credits is like just makes you immediately sit up and pay attention. Every line in that scene is an absolute zinger. My personal favorite is dating you is like dating a Stairmaster, but like you can really just pick a line on the page and it's one of the greatest things ever written. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is, it's like the whole movie's built around like Rooney being like, you're a terrible person, and like has to hinge on his like motivation from that scene of like the whole miscommunication and the whole like breakup. Like that drives the whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
So you need that first scene to be so electric. Otherwise, like the whole movie can sort of fall apart.
Mm-hmm. What's exciting about sort of like the Erica Albright, Eduardo Saverin, like two sides of the same coin thing is that like ostensibly it's the Erica / Rooney Mara breakup that like pushes Mark. But what actually like becomes his undoing on a personal level is like his relationship with Eduardo.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he's obviously an asshole for like creating Face Match and as Erica says, calling her a bitch on the internet. Like, that's obviously terrible, but what really makes you be like, this man is beyond help, is what he does to Eduardo.
Yeah
Mm-hmm. Going a bit ahead of that first scene, I can't help but laugh every time. Like, so you know, after he makes face mash and then Erica's roommate like sees that he was like blogging the whole time, and then her roommate goes like, Erica, you have to see this, he's blogged about you. The way that like that line is filled with so much dread and horror is so hilarious to me and feels like so of its time.
Yeah.
Like, imagine just saying someone saying like, he blogged about you.
No, like, nobody's so funny.
He tweeted about you.
There's a thread about you.
I agree. I wrote that was a quote like in my notes. Wrote just that quote down. I was like, that is so iconic and just like emblematic of like the era. Like, of course he blogged about her.
Yeah. This is a really great like period of time for the internet because it's still like, you know, you can still do things like hack into 8 different you know, dorms and take all their photos. But I think that like, you know, they can sort of give these like broad sweeping statements about what the internet is that like if the movie was set at a later time, I think would not resonate as well. I always think about, since we're on Erica's line where she's like, the internet isn't written in pencil, Mark. It's written in ink. You can't take that back. And it's like, yeah, now we all know that. But at the time, like it felt like this sort of monumental thing where it's like, right.
Yeah.
It's never going away. You just have to live with that forever.
I think that's the thing, too, is I think it's so hard for movies to portray the internet in an accurate way because it's sort of ever evolving.
Yeah.
Or, like, talking about, like, specific things. And so, like, this movie sort of has the edge of being a biopic and, like, a little bit set in the past. So that way it can be, like, this is, like, what it was like. Which is why then, like, even though, like, they're talking about blogging or things like that, but, like, it stays sort of the same to today. You're able to sort of draw those like clear lines versus something that came out today was trying to talk about something today. You'd be like, well, this is already dated within like a minute.
Yeah. And you know? I mean, yeah, it's like we said, it helps that it's Sorkin at the writing helm here, who is like a very talky man. So like there's, you know, so much of this movie is about like the business discussions and like the sort of the drama surrounding the actual internet rather than like internet itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Sort of like the litigations going on around.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that's part of why like a Facebook film couldn't work now, because like like the crux of The Social Network is that it's more like a personal drama than it is just about like the creation of Facebook. But like now there's just so much transparency. We're all clued into the internet and how it works. Like there's nothing that can be said in a Facebook movie that we don't already know.
That's
so
true.
I think like they really did make a Facebook film at the perfect time, even though I think like, you know, as you know, like people had a weird response to the film initially when it was announced. People were like, a Facebook movie? Like, what's that about? But like, it really was the perfect time to make that film.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think at its detriment too, as you were saying, like, I think like whether that be like an award season, as we'll get to, or like sort of critical reception, like if they had made this later, it really wouldn't have worked for sure.
They got in right under the wire before the internet was truly a nightmare. Like, people were still kind of like discovering it and like being excited and sort of like a little fascinated by it, which I think is a huge plus. And also, this is a very dry premise for a movie.
Oh,
and,
my God, yeah.
Like, the script cannot be boring for one single second. And like, thank God that Fincher is at his sort of like cross-cutting best here, because like, I think about Mank, which I'm sorry, Ayana, are you a fan of Mank? I feel
you're
like
really
I might
coming
be.
For Mank
I
today.
Don't like
him. I'm pro Mank, but okay. I also work at Netflix, so
right.
I
yeah.
think I'm, I
like,
can say it too much.
I'm like, you're really coming for Mank right
well,
now.
Well, if the Netflix powers of you listen to this episode, I'd just like to say that I think Netflix is a great company, super employable. I think they're doing some really amazing things that maybe I could be a part of. Just want to throw that out there. But
I mean, personally, I try to push the Mank agenda at work, because I'm very pro that movie.
Wow.
Boom.
On the contrary to everyone else who's
no,
seen
it. I respect your opinion. I felt like I couldn't believe that I was like dozing off during a Fincher movie. Mm. I was like, it's a fucking Fincher movie. Like, he is usually such a firecracker in terms of like the editing, and like we said, I mean, it's starting this movie over the logos. I feel like it's a really good example of that. But I'm gonna stop ragging on Mank. And just continue to praise The Social Network.
Well, I think it works
being
with
very
Sorkin's
dynamic
script too, because like, you have like Moneyball, which is essentially like should be a boring movie about numbers,
right,
but like it turns into like one of the most like electric movies ever, and like I'm obsessed with that movie.
But not as electric as The Social Network.
Sure, agreed. But like, you know what I mean, where it's like you have like, as we've like, I think we've mentioned enough, but like these two guys are good at making
a great
movies.
Pairing.
Shocking. But just like to, I guess, like keep moving forward, I think one of the things about Mark that I think is so good about this movie is the way that they dress him, and that the way the production design includes like little things about like his drinking and eating habits and everything, like where you have him in his fucking flip-flops and his Gap sweatshirt and like his Mountain Dew, and how like the guys are always throwing like beer to each other,
right,
and then it like culminates in the scene when they go to California where he's throwing the beers and the beers are just smashing against the wall when Sean comes to visit.
The double miss of the beer is like comedy gold.
It's so funny It's really just so good, but it goes to show so much about like Mark. Like, of course he would be drinking a Mountain Dew. Like, of course he would be a wearing shorts outside in the winter type of kid.
Well, I was gonna say, like, that awesome shot of him like running through the snow in his socks and his Adidas slides and his shorts is like real college energy.
And we haven't even mentioned, like, it's a Boston movie.
Yeah.
Which is like, any movie set in Boston, immediately you're starting with 5 stars for me.
Ayana, Jordan and I are both from the Boston area, relatively, but Jordan much more so than I am.
Yes, I very much push the pro-Boston agenda.
Yeah, we've got the pro-Mank agenda, the pro-Molly's Game agenda, and the pro-Boston agenda.
Yes.
Those are the hills that we've chosen to die on.
Those are the three pillars.
Yes.
The three lies of Harvard.
Yeah, hey, also incredible scene.
Great scene. It is a Boston
movie. But I was just saying, like, the accuracy in which he shoots people in Boston and like the way that he uses Boston, I feel like should get discussed more specifically while this is Cambridge, but like it's really like such a well done Boston movie. Like, you really get the sense of like the energy permeating because it's like such a college town, and you feel that as they're like intercutting between all the different schools and everything, like with the dorm and frat parties, and they sort of get the how everyone views Harvard people as like pretentious douchebags, and then they really get that in a beautiful way.
For sure. I don't know if I'm willing to ride as hard for that aspect as you are. But I mean,
like, how many, you know, so many kids in Boston who are like the shorts of the winter kid, and they feel like the Mark. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like shorts and winter is a specific type of person.
I can't necessarily get on for it.
Well, you know what I'm talking about? Like, I feel like shorts and winter is a specific type of person. No?
Yeah, I mean, I they exist here too.
They do. Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is just
I'm
going to drop the from that one.
Okay. I was going to say, I think this is Harvard notoriously doesn't let people shoot on their campus, and I think that this movie looks like it was shot in Harvard, which is very impressive considering
I didn't even realize it wasn't Harvard until I listened to the commentary and he was like, "Oh yeah, that's not Harvard." And I was like, "What? Oh my god."
Like,
I mean, I
how?
I wouldn't know what Harvard looks like, but like, I believed it.
it's very believable. The Thirsty Scholar, which is the bar that he and Eric are at the beginning, though, is a real bar in Boston that you can go to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they actually shot inside of it, but they did. There you go. Look at that. See, the Boston knowledge is coming in handy.
We should, we'll take a pilgrimage.
Okay, great.
We'll recreate the scene. We'll do a whole episode at the bar.
We both went to college in Boston, so like we should have just done it while we were there. Like, we were certainly obsessed with it enough. I think a couple of my friends went, and I was like, I don't know if I can
be
do
that
this.
Film kid enough.
In good faith. But yes, no, I love what this movie says about Harvard kids, specifically the idea that like everyone is inventing something and like you have to be like a certain level of like insane person to go to Harvard. Girls want to get with guys that go to Harvard, et cetera, et cetera.
It's all about the .edu.
Yeah. And I mean, one of my favorite lines and line deliveries of this movie is the Army Hammer. He's going to think it's stupid. Just say it. Because we're gentlemen of Harvard. Like, it's so good. And I feel like that really sums up, in a way, what what these people are all about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
It's good. The president's office scene, I always forget how good it is.
The president is just like, you fucking idiot.
And punch me in the face.
Right. Right. Yeah. The interplay with him and his secretary. Yeah. Yeah. It's so good.
When they break the doorknob, it's great.
It's great.
It's all
here's
great.
Here's your 300-year-old doorknob.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, we could literally go through every single scene, but I think we should just call out some of our favorite, like, campus life scenes before we move into the second half, which is, like, the Palo Alto section of it. So, Ayana, any scenes that you would like to push the agenda for?
Oh, my gosh. Circle back to me. I'll think about it in a second. Okay.
Okay.
I got you.
You got
Eduardo
it.
Dancing over to Mark when he enters the party, where he does like a little shimmy.
Yeah.
And Mark is just like very overwhelmed. And again, this just goes to show the relationship between the two of them, because this all ties back into like the Phoenix and everything, where like it's just so sad when Mark is just like, Eduardo will come over and he's so excited about something. He's like, I got punched. And he'll be like, oh my God, that's great. Like, you should be proud of that. Like, don't worry if it like you don't go any further. And right. It's just like he's constantly like sticking needles into him. And Eduardo like keeps coming back to him with like puppy dog affection. And like he'll tell him about his dad. And like I have to, like, my dad's going to be nervous about this or whatever. And like he's like, we could graft that onto a queerness if you want as well, like having a poor relationship
with
your
relationships
parents.
With your father.
But it's like he'll like say that he has like a bad relationship with his dad, and Mark will be like, yeah, no, I know, but then like not emotionally support him at all. So it's like all these scenes in the school, it's just like Eduardo constantly sort of reaching out to Mark, and Mark being like, no.
Eduardo is always there for him, and Mark is just like never able to give him what he deserves. I mean, it's even like, and he never learns his lesson, obviously, with the diluting the shares, but like a line that I love that I feel like is so revealing is when Eduardo comes to visit California and
dripping
Mark's like
wet in the rain.
Oh my God. I mean,
oh my God.
The angstiest shot, right?
Right. The way that Andrew Garfield looks too, he's just like, oh.
He's just a sad puppy.
It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, but like I love Mark being like, how's Christy? And he's like, oh, Christy's crazy. And Mark's like, still, it's cool that you have a girlfriend. And
right.
It's like, right, you don't understand what
you're
it
not
is
listening.
To be a real person. Yeah. Like, you have no idea, like, how to interact with people, even me, your best friend. Like, your priorities are so fucked up. Yeah, it's, what can I say? But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on campus. Like I said, I am obviously not an Army Hammer fan anymore. Understatement of the century. That was a whole mess. But for a while, obviously pre all of the bullshit coming out, I was like, yes, Army Hammer, problematic fave, like, love him. Clearly that is not my opinion anymore, but I do think that obviously like a lot of the stuff that he and Josh Pence's body with Army Hammer's face are doing in this movie are good. It's very good. The CGI is
it's
very good.
Masterful.
It's crazy how good it is, and like it doesn't feel off in the slightest, and I don't think it's ever gonna like age bad.
It would have aged poorly by now, I think. Fincher has always been like notoriously great with CGI.
Well, it's the invisible CGI that he does,
and like it's so good. I mean, like he added like, you know, cold breath in that scene at the Jewish fraternity party,
right?
Because it was apparently freezing, but like you couldn't see their breath, which sucks for them. Or like, you know, that awesome like Zodiac shot that I always think of with like the car turning, mm-hmm. where like the camera's like locked to the car. So good. Yeah. Or like the panic room shot where it like zooms like through the kitchen and like through the glass and stuff. It's cool. Like he uses it sparingly, but extremely effectively. Counterpoint,
I don't think he uses it sparingly. I think he, like, if you look at it, it's a lot of VFX. Like, he has, like,
you just can't see
some of the most VFX of, like, any movies, but it's, like, invisible stuff. Like, he's constantly, like, throwing in minor tweaks to make, like, everything, like, perfect. Like, there was a whole video essay that I watched where it's, like, he has some of the most VFX in, like, any movies.
Really?
Because he just deploys them for, like, small invisible things to like whether it be like a weather related thing or like a perfection thing. It's just like he's trying to make everything so meticulous to like the image itself.
Yeah,
I mean, which of course like then we see with this movie with Army or just like all the small stuff. You have like the rowing sequence, etc.
Yeah,
with like the tilt shift lens. But
so good. One of my favorite Fincher stories is that he and Steven Soderbergh are like famously friends, which is hilarious considering like that they're polar opposites on like directing the directing spectrum. But like Soderbergh tells the story where like he was sitting in he like came to visit Fincher for like an editing session or something, and David Fincher was like, okay, the light in the top right hand corner of this shot or whatever is like two stops too high, so we need to like mask that out and like we need to fix it. And Soderbergh like had to leave the room. He was like, I can't do that. I don't understand how you make films like this.
That's so good.
It's just an insane level of detail, and I think that is one of the many reasons why I like him. Not the fact that like he's exacting, he does it until it's right, but the idea that like he sees film as like this amazing reflection of like reality that can be perfect, mm-hmm. Where like he needs everything to just be like as cinematically precise as possible, and like we'll do that in post. I really appreciate that. I think that like, I don't know, I like maximalist filmmaking. I like filmmaking that's like, we understand that this is a movie and like here are all the different things that you can do that you couldn't do if you were just like running around with a camera on a street.
Totally.
It's cool. Rocks. Great. What can I say? He rocks. Yeah.
Circling back, do you have any, because I feel like at the school there's some iconic stuff. There's the deposition stuff, which is always great with Rashida Jones. But Ayana, do you have any sort of,
we're circling back to you, we're back.
So I think like the disciplinary hearing is a really great scene. You mentioned like the costume very briefly. I think like the combination of like the hoodie, the t-shirt, the pajama bottoms, the like flip-flops is like it like works so well in like two ways of just like, this guy does not care about authority and he's just like so self-absorbed and thinks he's above everything, and it just like says so much about who Mark Zuckerberg the character is. And then but also just kind of like going back to the fact that like he's still a child at this point, and like he doesn't know how, he doesn't like own a suit or anything, like he doesn't know how to dress properly. I think, like, you know, even something as simple as just, like, wearing flip-flops is, like, such a good choice and, like, says so much. Another scene I was going to say is, it's not quite campus. It's a different campus.
Oh,
but
we'll take
the,
it.
But the rowing scene set to In the Hall of the Mountain King, I think that's one of the most, like, incredible sequences of just, like, all time. I'm obsessed with that scene. And that song as well, so like good. I know it's just like a cover of the remake,
going.
It's like, it's just so incredible. Like, I don't really like understand what the purpose of that scene is, except that like, I guess it's just like a reflection of like just how low the Winklevii are at this point. But like, you know, do you need a whole sequence of them rowing to say that?
Reasons.
But like,
yeah,
but it's not like, it doesn't feel necessary, but like it absolutely is. It just feels so perfect. I love that scene so much.
Yeah, oh, I love it too for that specific reason, because it is like one of this is a pretty indulgent movie in a good way. I mean, like, do you really need two cross-cutting depositions for the entire 2-hour runtime? Obviously not.
Like, the fact that it is only 2 hours isn't, because
I know
moves.
It's right on the money.
It
two
goes
hours
so fast.
Too. Yeah,
it goes so quick.
Yeah, but like that, the rowing Hall of the Mountain King scene is very self-indulgent and very much like a look at what I am doing. Like, look at the filmmaking, and guess what?
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh yeah, he like deploys tilt shift to make it look like these are just like small figurines on like a river. You know what I mean? And like the way that he shoots it, you're just like, oh, I don't know. I think that you're spot on. I mean, that is like one of the best sequences because you get going too, because the score is such a good cover of that, even though like the song was already like that tempo, but it's just like even better for some reason.
It's cool. I like the ratchet like ramping up that they use where it's like it's almost like techno, like the blah 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 blah. I obviously can't do it, but
the score get itself the idea. Of like,
I know, I can't believe we haven't even talked about the score.
Unbelievable. Oh, like, I mean, I go back to this is like obviously like I'm a loser and I listen to like this stuff all the time, but like this is such a go-to soundtrack to listen to while working or doing anything because it's just like,
yeah,
it was like the soundtrack to like my entire time at uni.
Yeah,
for
that
sure
was the thing I listened to.
Oh, I would put this on, I put this on to study while I was in school, and now it's like the one of the only things that I can write to, because I need to have like background music when I write, but it can't be anything with lyrics, and it can't be anything that I'm not like familiar with. So this is always a score that I go to because it's high tempo enough too. Mm-hmm. Like I love like the Beale Street score, but I can't write to that score because it's like
that's
calm.
The one I go to.
No. I need like some energy.
Literally. Like, yeah. I'm like, I need something like that, a ghost story. I'm just like,
no.
Vibing.
I can't vibe. I need
Do
to
you
like,
just like
be
need
up
something
in arms.
That makes you cry.
Yes.
You haven't, Ayana, I mean, you it, have no idea how accurate
me
that
as
is.
A person? maybe. But no, but like on the score, if we're talking about queerness, what the soundtrack has is like a lot of like very phallic and like masculine names to the songs.
Yeah.
Like there's,
penetration.
Yeah. It's penetration.
A
it's like
the
familiar taste, like hand covers, like all this stuff. You're like, it's a very like intimate sort of like masculine sounding thing. You're like, are you going for something here? Are you not? And I think this leads back to like the overarching question, which I don't think Fincher's answered or Sorkin has answered, but it's like, this feels like a satire of sorts also of like straight college culture and how it's sort of searing at like, look at like all men will do because like women will reject them. And
well,
like, and how like straight men are the worst. And like by sort of taking that approach, it also like lends itself to that sort of queer reading where you're like, by being like a satire of, or just by showing, I guess it's really like you want to say it's a satire. It's a heightening of like how men behave in college, but it's really not. They're that bad. But you know what I mean? But it, like by showing it the way that they do, it's such a specific critique that you're able to then get those more queer readings.
Well, yeah, it feels reflective. I think like the whole opening sequence with the clubs and like, you know, there's that shot of the two girls making out and there's like all of like strip poker and like dancing on tables and all of that kind of stuff. And even like in the opening, Mark being like, well, if I was in a club, like I would invite you to places
and you
would get to meet people that you wouldn't normally get to meet, that like, and you know, obviously the juxtaposition of the final clubs with the face match ranking. I mean, there's even that hard cut to the two girls being like, this is so disgusting. Like it definitely feels very intentioned and very reflexive. And like we said, like the end of this movie, which like, you know, thematically is like, no matter what, you can't get over like rejection, you're still going to be a bad person,
right?
And no matter how successful you are, you're still going to be a bad person, and like women still don't want you because you're a bad person.
And like Rashida Jones too, he's like, do you want to like get salad or like eat something? And she's like,
no,
I've been here for like a couple hours, I know what you're like, I'm okay.
Yeah, and I mean, like, obviously, Sean Parker is the worst human alive.
Yes.
How old are they, Sean? It's not polite to ask. How old are they, Sean? Like, that whole business is terrible, obviously. The fact that he's, like, screwing the interns, it's all bad. I think that the movie definitely has that theme on its mind.
Yeah.
I mean, like we said, it's like a dick measuring contest, and that, like, the internet can be like a power extension for you as a guy if you cannot like use traditional means like the Winklevi.
The quote,
IRL.
To tie into that.
Yeah.
You think you know about me, don't you? He goes, I read enough. You know how much I've read about you?
Nothing.
And like that delivery of nothing is like him just like gutting Eduardo, and is again like all about the internet and like him
JT.
Flexing. He's just like, look at me. I am, even though I'm a deplorable person, how cool am I?
Right.
Yeah.
The Sean Parker Variety Hour.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Okay. So then carrying forward, Mm-hmm. What other sort of big, I guess, like, moments happen? Obviously, everything with, like, Brenda and stuff. Like, but then I guess, like, when, it really becomes the Sean Parker
when Sean
show.
Parker enters, which is, like, right at the 1 hour mark. That's, like, the midpoint, which is crazy because, like, he is so well remembered for this film and he's only in, like, 50% of it. Like, he pops in right at the 1 hour mark. And I think that that changes everything because then it does become about, like, you did the thing. You fulfilled the fantasy that you didn't think you could have. You can start your own final club, basically. Yeah. You can have like this power that you've been chasing because you're successful.
Right. He has all the kids drinking to be an intern and all that
shit. And like the house in California, like the overgrown frat house in California, ziplining from the roof and stuff like that. So I think that that's like a very smart change because that's when the movie gets much more sinister too. And you really start to see Eduardo like coming apart at the seams.
But it's also like it doesn't ever give you an answer on some stuff, which I love. Like, well, it's like,
what do you mean?
So they have the whole chicken sequence and you're like,
chicken.
Is it
oh my God. Wow.
Right. Yes.
You're
wait,
like,
we,
cause you're
need
like,
to interrogate
was
this
Mark planting? Was it a Winklevite thing? Or you're like, was it someone else? So then they have the thing at the end with Justin Timberlake where it's like obviously heavily insinuated that like Mark was doing all these things because someone like stepped out of line for what he wanted the company to be. But it's like, I love how they sort of like lay out these things and like leave it sort of ambiguous for you to be like, what do you think? Like, was this Mark? Was this just coincidence? Was this the Winklevi, you know?
Right, because this film is, like, very strong about, like, the conclusions that it leads you to. Like, I think that, yes, obviously there's, like, a level of ambiguity, but even though, like, Mark settled out of court with Eduardo and, like, the Winklevi for, like, undisclosed amounts of money, we can, like, the movie wants you to see that, like, Mark fucked over his best friend.
Yeah.
But his best friend specifically, like, so severely with the share dilution.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, one, who do you think planted the story about the chicken? You personally. And two, who do you think called the cops?
It was me.
In my opinion, they were both Mark.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You agree?
I have to agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I think so we can all agree that Mark Zuckerberg is a bad person.
Terrible person. I love that Oh, sorry. No, go for it.
No, I mean, this is a completely different thing.
Please.
But I saw a TikTok the other day, and it was about this guy, and he has some chickens, and he feeds his chickens chicken eggs.
And, what?
Yeah. And, like, apparently, like chickens with, like, cracked eggshells in them. And apparently his chickens just love chicken eggs, and it made me think, like, wow, maybe Eduardo wasn't so wrong after all.
No, that's like, I feel like that's more fucked up.
That's wild.
That's like that's like feeding chickens their babies,
right? Yeah. Ooh, that's messed up.
Some cannibalistic behavior on TikTok. Oh my God.
Yeah, can you imagine trying to get into a final club and have someone be like, you have to take care of a chicken for a week? I'd be like, I'm good.
I was like, they were like, they try to like, I don't know if they try to play that up for like, oh my God, how unbelievable. But I was just like, yeah, this makes sense. Like, would happen in frats.
It's like the Statue of the Three Lies.
Right.
And like, you know, them chugging
puking
bourbon.
All this stuff,
yeah, all this terrible stuff.
I mean, the chicken scene, though, is so goddamn good. Because Eduardo was just like falling apart. He's just like, the chicken, like, I was like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I can't believe you brought this up. Like, oh my God.
The salmon and the trout.
Don't fish, eat other fish. That might be my, I mean, there are so many good lines and so many good line readings. It's so hard to pick a favorite. And like, this movie has such cultural staying
Mark's
power.
Oops, at the end of that, where he's just like, oops. And you're like, I want to fucking throttle you.
I think this is in the commentary, but I found it on IMDb trivia that apparently David Fincher's favorite line in the movie is, let me just check my math.
Yes.
Yes, I got the same thing. Like, which is obviously such a great,
it's
like,
so good
douchebaggy line.
It's
so good.
Yeah. It's so good. But don't fish, eat other fish line reading is maybe one of my favorite things. And then you have King Dustin Moskowitz being like, what is he talking about?
Yeah, right. Like, right. No one knows what's actually going on.
Yeah. I mean, you even with Eduardo in the breakup, iconic breakup laptop smash scene, being like, oh my God, you planned that story about the chicken. And Sean being like,
what's
the
chicken?
Right. What the hell is the chicken? Yeah.
Because it is like all their relationship. It is like an integral moment in your relationship that like, if you're going through a breakup with someone, you're like, was this one fight that we had sort of the crux for the downfall of our relationship? Like, yeah. That totally tracks this is like about, real life relationships. Like, people about... will separate on goddamn moments.
Sorry.
No, I know. I'm just like, that's like, it just, that's why I'm just like, it's such a clear breakup movie.
This is about me getting punched by the Phoenix. Wow, that was chaotic. Yes, Ayana, what
No, I was going to say, there's like another iconic like fish line about like, do you want to catch the 14 trout or the 3,000-pound marlin? And then Eduardo was like, you know, marlin don't weigh 3,000 pounds, do you?
I don't think he would be holding a marlin the size of a Range Rover.
Brenda Song is just like, oh, fucking
exactly. God. Like, Brenda Song is so good in that scene, being like, do you think we might be steering away from the point? Like, right. She's very reasonable until, like, I mean, if I had to critique one thing about this movie, I would say that they do kind of turn her into, like, the crazy ex-girlfriend.
In no scenes that we've seen. But, like, I love it,
just
though.
How's Christy?
She's a
Christy's
girl
crazy.
She is.
We have to hashtag step. Girl boss.
Gaslight, yes. Gatekeep, girl boss. You set your silk scarf on fire.
She's given like Amy Dunn before Amy Dunn existed.
Yes. Wow, do we think this was like his trial run?
Absolutely. Just like micro dosing on Amy Dunn. Yeah.
He was definitely like, I don't know when Gone Girl the book came out, but he like probably got it and he was like, all right, we're gonna test this out with Brenda here.
Make sure we can make this work. Yeah. And I mean, that scene is so funny with Andrew Garfield incredible. Being like, what's wrong with you? And then running around for the fire extinguisher. I love
the
all
way
of
it's
it.
Also like a phone call too. Right. And it's just like the way that he like juxtaposes like the insanity happening with Andrew and Mark, but it's just like it's not a boring phone call.
It's not.
And it's so good that it's
nice
not.
And quick. It's like a 10 line phone call. Yeah. Which is the correct amount of time for a phone call on screen. Yeah.
So, and like, even within that, he has the line where he goes, quote, I don't want to that guy between us, in referring to Sean Parker.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's just like, she views Sean sort of as like this man kind of coming in to try to break them up and sort of like step in the middle of their relationship.
Like we said, it is a love triangle. It's the idea that like you have the toxic bad boy, Sean Parker, and then you have nice, reliable boy next door, Eduardo.
Right. And I mean, like, in real life, people are billionaires and all are probably terrible people. Oh, like in the movie.
We're not talking about real people. We're talking
this
about
is removed from
real
life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is like, I think that this movie was very helpful in doing a lot for like Mark Zuckerberg's image specifically, and that people were like, Mark Zuckerberg is a crazy
terrible.
Person.
Yes.
Which is, you know, useful.
True.
But this is very much a movie about characters and not about the real people. I mean, like, everyone is heightened in a very, very good way.
We haven't even talked about like Max Minghella in this movie, where he's just sort of like existing alongside everything.
I would love to know. I mean, it was 2010. I can forgive some things, such as Andrew Garfield playing Brazilian man Eduardo Saverin, but I would love to know what led to David Fincher being like, Divya Narendra should be played by none other than Max Minghella.
In the commentary, David Fincher was like, oh yeah, we auditioned like 200 Indian guys, but I just felt like Max Minghella was the right guy. Like, really?
Right.
You auditioned that many Indians and none of them were right. Like,
David.
Like, oh,
Dev
no.
Patel exists.
David.
You know?
Also, talk about another nepotism hire.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Come on now. I mean, Armie Hammer, you could consider a nepotism hire too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I know. That has always, like, the first time that I, like, properly watched this movie, I think when I was probably a freshman in college, I was like, excuse me?
Pump the brakes. We have to stop.
I mean, I think Max Minghella is very good in this movie.
I mean, I agree. Like, kind of a fun performance. How he's, like, the most obsessed with Mark, and the brothers are just, like, in the beginning, the brothers are like, we'll figure it out. Like, we're 265, 220, and there's two of me. Like, we'll just beat him up. And he's like, no, I want his head on a table. I want to gut him alive.
I
want
to hire the Sopranos to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, like, great.
I love that their dynamic is just, like, Divya and his two giant henchmen.
Yeah.
Yes.
The I'm 6'5", 220, and there's two of me line was
iconic.
Like, very, very formative to me. But I can't reference any of this stuff anymore.
Well, as we said, Armie Hammer plays himself in this movie, so I think it's fine.
Look, I'm telling you, it's good because everyone thinks that they are so fucking cool.
Yes.
And so it works very well for, you know, how those characters are coming through the screen. I feel like the last thing that we should interrogate further is the laptop smash breakup scene, which we've already kind of covered. But it's a must. It's simply iconic. Yes. What were you going to say? Because I was going to say
about any like casting we missed. I was going to say that Caleb Landry Jones pops up for a shot.
Great cameo.
I was going to mention. Oh my God. Right? I like that surprised me when he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, this face. Caleb,
it's
what
great,
are you
like prescient casting.
Yeah, I really know. Is. I don't think that I realized it until maybe like the last time that I watched this movie. Because when we got to the Coke scene, I was like, "There's a cameo in this scene." I just don't remember. I mean, it wasn't a cameo at that point, obviously. Like he was a nobody. But I was like, "There's somebody in this scene."
Yeah, I know this. Yeah. Yes. But you were saying
it
the fuck you flip flops scene.
Yes. I mean, I would love to smash a laptop like 100 times or however many takes they had to do of this. There's like a supercut somewhere of just the laptop smashes, which I'm obsessed with.
There's like a documentary about the making of the film. And then it like gets to that scene and like on the floor, there's just like 100 laptops sitting there.
So good.
Yeah, it's great. Like, can you imagine how, like, if I was Andrew Garfield, I would just have so much adrenaline running through my body of like shoving open those glass doors, doing that epic tracking shot, and then smashing a laptop.
He's locked in, or no, he's wired in.
He's wired in. Oh yeah, how about now? You still wired in? Like, it's so it makes me so happy.
It doesn't
make me happy because it's really sad. And then like they punctuate it perfectly by cutting to the how much were everyone's shares diluted down to.
Mm-hmm.
0.03%. Like stone cold. So fucking cold.
But his delivery of the whole fuck you flip-flops.
I'm
like,
sorry, my problem is the cleaner.
Can't, like, how did we not give him best supporting actor just for the way that he's able to weaponize his spit in that? How, like, because sure. I'm serious. Like, I think that, like, actors sometimes can be super self-conscious when yelling and, like, you won't see, like, spit or like bodily fluids or things like that. And like this, we get into like this, like with Oscar campaigning where you'll have like someone's snot act where like, you know what I mean? Like so much like bodily fluids are coming, but like the way that he spits and like on like specific enunciations is so fucking good that it just like makes his delivery 10 times better than it's like he could yell it, but like yelling and having stuff fly out of his mouth and just everything about it and like tears swelling on his face. I'm like, this is our greatest line reading of the decade.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has like the flashiest role in this movie. Obviously,
for sure.
Like Eisenberg pulled out the best actor nom as he deserved. But like, I think it's so unfortunate that Andrew Garfield didn't get nominated. But I think that we should talk about the 2011 Oscars, which was, dare I say,
unhinged,
a chaotic year. Ayana, I know that you have your finger on the pulse of awards seasons and award campaign. So do you remember this insane year? I think this was slightly too early for me to have watched the Oscars.
I was watching this one.
I did not watch this Oscars.
Yeah.
So I was the loser of the group.
Cool. I think I might have started watching the first year that I can remember is the year that The Artist won, which I think is the next year.
I think I started watching in like 2013, 14.
Yes, exactly same. For me, yeah, that's when I was like old enough to stay up until like midnight with school the next day because they're on a Sunday and I was on the East Coast. I mean, you probably had to sit here watching them live. You're up until like 4
they,
or 5 a.m.
They are the Oscars like 1 a.m. to 5.
Yeah,
like
dear Lord,
yeah. That's just awful. Crazy. Like I cannot. That's a horrible time slot.
Yeah, do not like that.
It was the absolute worst this year when I was up at like 1 in the morning. And then all of these like terrible awards were being handed out. And I was like, I wasted a night to watch this. It was like, it was truly just the most like discouraging experience.
We had Ella Kemp on recently, who is also in the UK. And she said the exact same thing where she was like, I have never
this
been
Oscars.
Angrier about having to be up at this hour.
Steven Soderbergh is quaking.
I'm sorry, Steven. I would say it's not your fault, but it's a little bit your fault.
Yeah.
So.
Just give me one clip show. But I remember this one because this was famously Anne Hathaway and James Franco hosting, which was...
Oh, no. Wow, this really was a
one of the worst Oscar hosts ever.
Oh,
and the
no
thing
question.
Is, the blame got put on Anne, but she tried her goddamn hardest. And it was really just James Franco fucking doing absolutely go guy, give us nothing. And it was so infuriating that she got... the online flash bar, like whatever, backlash, because she is like trying to do at least something
over and over again.
Is just like,
yeah,
here we are, haha,
over and over again, women are punished for things that should be blamed on men. This is a great example of that. And I mean, I've never understood the Anne Hathaway hate. I totally forgot that this was the year that they hosted. This is like truly maybe like a cursed year for Academy Award history.
I agree.
And yeah, like it's exactly like you said, she was trying her best and like James Franco was high as shit and like couldn't hang and it sucks. But
watching
this is
it live. You were like, this is a train.
It's a train and it's wrecking.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this movie gets nominated.
This movie does get nominated. I mean, the other reason that this Oscar year is so like disastrous is because the crop of nominees is very good.
It's so
like
good.
Extremely good.
We'll go down the list.
The best picture
nominated this year. You have Winter's Bone, True Grit, good movie.
True Grit. Winter's Bone is also extremely iconic.
Yes.
Don't.
Good movie.
Yeah.
Toy Story 3, Chef's Kiss. The Social Network, The Kids Are All Right, Inception, The Fighter, Black Swan, 127 Hours, and the winner, The King's Speech.
Like, ugh. Right, like you just feel the air deflate out of the room.
It feels like a very like a Green Book year.
Can you imagine having Inception, The Social Network, True Grit,
Black Swan and Toy Story 3
was never gonna win. I hate to break it to you, but like all those movies up for best picture. And the thing is, I don't even dislike The King's Speech that much. I think it's like a perfectly fine movie, but like It was just a really unfortunate year of being like, right, the Oscars will make the worst decision at any given point. Because this is also, I mean, this is the Melissa Leo year, aka the year that Amy Adams was robbed of an Oscar, one in six. God. Yeah. And like the only reason that Melissa Leo won is because like she poured tens of thousands of dollars into her own campaign. Yes. And then Tom Hooper winning Best Director.
Oh my God!
It's
for
insane.
The kids, that is daylight robbery, right?
Did
there.
This?
Right?
Yeah.
No, against the Coens and David Fincher and Darren Aronofsky and David O. Russell. Which ew. Eh. But like,
no,
come on.
No, it's
come on.
It's unbelievable. Truly one of the worst deals because this is also like the Oscars expands everything to try to include more popular movies.
Is this the year that it does?
That's earlier. But you have sort of like post Dark Knight, everyone's thinking that Nolan's going to get a win here or something because he's like, you know, the populist filmmaker. So you're sort of expecting like anytime he gets a nom that there's going to be some sort of squeaker.
Yeah.
And especially it feels like with Inception because that movie was so huge commercially and critically.
Yeah.
Like, and it should have, you would have thought that this would have been something where they're like, okay, we'll give him his Oscar for this.
Yeah.
And they don't.
He's not even nominated for Best Director.
No.
Which is crazy. David Fincher was at least nominated for The Social Network. Thank you very much.
I will say that I'm glad that Natalie won.
Okay.
She deserved.
We have talked about Black Swan in the past, which is, if people don't already know this, my favorite movie of all time.
A great movie.
One of the most deserved Best Actress wins ever, in my opinion. It's just rude that it didn't win more. But whatever.
Natalie Portman also had an integral part in The Social Network.
Right.
So,
oh my God.
Like, that's also a win for The Social Network right there.
Secretly, yes. She is the titular, not the titular, but she is the movie star that they mention in passing.
That's so funny.
It's great.
Yeah. I read as well that like Aaron Sorkin like got in touch with her and she like her and a bunch of friends just like went to him and told him about like what social life at Harvard was like at the time like Facebook was starting. So like a lot of that campus life stuff that probably came from like Natalie Portman's experience, which is wild.
Uncredited screenwriting.
I know.
There.
Written by Aaron Sorkin and Natalie Portman.
But like, if we're going to go through just further, just like to touch on the best actor, well, actually, you know what? We'll save it.
No.
But the best actress noms are really great.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, all of like the categories are good. It's just like, it's some of the choices that are where you sort of question it. Like best supporting actor with Christian Bale getting it. I mean, it's a great performance in The Fighter, but like the fact that you don't have a nom for anybody in this movie, like specifically Garfield, does feel flawed.
Needs a nom. I would like to ask who you would lose in the best supporting actor race. Currently, the lineup that actually happened was Christian Bale for The Fighter, like we said, John Hawkes for Winter's Bone, Jeremy Renner for The Town, Mark Ruffalo for The Kids Are All Right, and Jeffrey Rush for The King's Speech.
Jeffrey Rush, you're gone.
I would also say that Jeffrey Rush is gone. I feel like sort of like the easy one is to lose John Hawkes because like also it's not as buzzy, but like I think that that's kind of like a cool nom.
But the thing, honestly, of those all, like if it's between Garfield and Jeremy Renner for The Town, I think honestly I might give it to Renner.
That's insane.
I think Renner's performance in The Town is unbelievably good.
Oh wait, I have to tell you something that I don't think I've ever told you.
Do you not like that movie?
I don't like that movie.
Shocking. Whatever. Bad taste.
No, I don't like it.
I don't like
But
thank you, Ayana. Thank you.
Him in that movie. He is so in the pocket in that goddamn movie.
I don't like that movie. I'm sorry.
Him. I'm not talking about the movie. Him.
I don't like him in that movie. Him. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You don't like him in that movie?
Look, I love The Departed. You know that Boston girl.
Just a blanket dislike.
This was a difficult decision for me to come to because I was going in being prepared to love it and being prepared to stand him because
knew that he was nominated. Renner has a good performance. That is a wild take.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But Ayana is I feel like she's on my side secretly, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I feel bad that we keep pitting you against
I was gonna say, you're low-key sounding like one of those people who got the Jeremy runner-up right now.
No. This is actually probably the only movie where I really like his performance.
A huge burn. I mean, I love him in The Hurt Locker.
Right, right. So those two movies.
He's all
right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, it kind of is like the Mark Wahlberg Departed nom when you're like, he's so good that it's undeniable. Except I don't think that he's so good that it's undeniable in The Town. But this is not an episode.
I thought you were about to say that Mark The Departed. I was about to be like, oh, no.
No, that's insane. That's insane. I mean, we've literally talked about The Departed on this show a very long time ago. But like,
anyways.
Yes. This is not an episode about The Town. It's an episode about The Social Network.
So Sorkin wins for screenplay.
He does.
Good for him.
Good for him.
This probably, as we said, this gives him the carte blanche to then go direct and pretty much make anything he wants.
Yeah, and now I feel like he is not writing unless he's directing.
Yes.
Which is kind of crazy, because he's just going to become a director now and make, like, mediocre movies.
I find that quite sad.
Like, I agree.
We're just not going to have films like The Social Network anymore. That's just kind of upsetting.
Yeah, I agree.
He has, the upcoming, I don't know, the Ricardos, right?
Meet the Ricardos, yes. And I believe he has a couple of secret projects in development. But his quote is, like, obviously so high for screenwriting now, he can demand whatever he wants. And, like, I think that is, like, a dangerous carte blanche, like you were saying, where it's, like, he has complete free reign on the script. And then he has, like, you know, a directing clause, so it's like he really is, like, totally unrestrained, because it's Sorkin. He can do no wrong, you know.
Right.
I mean, he obviously has, but I think that collaboration is a good thing. Collaboration is what film is all about.
Yes.
You know. Yeah, we'll see.
Filmmaking is a team effort.
It really is
a team effort. And when great people come together, amazing things happen.
I think it is fascinating, just for one last thing on the Oscars, that for visual effects, Inception obviously wins, but you don't have this movie nommed for anything. You have Alice in Wonderland, Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 1, Hereafter, and Iron Man 2. I feel like this movie should have snuck in there.
Fincher, I don't think, has ever been nominated for Best Visual Effects. And it's because, like we were saying, he might low-key have, like, more visual effects than, say, Hereafter.
Right, but it's just not flashy.
It's just not flashy. Yeah.
Which is a testament to then how good the VFX are.
But also, that's the story of the Oscars time and time and time again, which is, if it's not flashy, then, like, we're not interested.
Classic internet.
It sucks. But this film won 3 Oscars. Yes. Adapted screenplay, best film editing, and best score.
Good.
All incredibly well deserved.
The score, I find that one, like, as much as I love Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's score, like, that was nominated up against How to Train Your Dragon, which I think is, like, like one of the undersung like best scores of the decade. Like it does not, I know it got, obviously it got an Oscar nomination, so a lot
that's
of people liked it.
That's impressive that
like,
it got a nom.
But
yeah,
like that score is so good, and like I'm really sad that John Powell, the composer, he's just like not gotten the recognition that he deserves, because like the second and third films, they also have like scores that did not need to go as hard as they do. And like I say this as
no,
someone who's top artist on my Spotify Wrapped of the decade was John Powell, because I listened to the How to Train Your Dragon scores so much.
I love that. Like,
wasn't your top person of the decade John Williams?
No, Alexander Desplat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew
that's
it was a
good
composer.
It's the Shape. Yeah. I mean, like all of his scores. Well, I mean, he had the King's Speech. I don't really like the King's Speech.
I was
going to
say,
like,
he was nominated in this year.
The Shape of Water score is the one that did it for me, because I just have it constantly on.
I'm obsessed with the Little Women score. I think it's
a
awesome.
Good score.
It's so good.
But
This also has the Inception score nominated for this year, which is also like an iconic score for talking about like,
yes.
Wah.
I think that it's very cool that The Social Network won Best Score, because it's not sort of like a traditional score. Like, it's kind of weird. And obviously, like, all of the Reznor and Ross scores are awesome, but I like them best when they're in sort of like this like techno space, like the girl
really
with
the soul score a lot.
Eh.
See, I mean, the Watchmen score, fucking unbelievable.
Whips. And I was gonna say, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is like an amazing score that I'm obsessed with. Yeah, the Watchmen score is everything. I like their weird, like unnerving techno music. It's awesome. But it's a very non-Oscar-y score to win. So
if you were gonna give John Powell an Oscar nom for any of his scores, a win, sorry, yeah, which would it be? For How to Train Your Dragon, or is there another one where you're like, that's
absolutely
the one?
That's just one of the best scores, period. Like,
I'm gonna have to go listen to it immediately after this to get in the headspace.
I know, I have to go listen to it.
You have to. Oh my god, it's like, it's honestly, it's like so brilliant, and there's so many iconic just pieces in there, and it's like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's just, it's so good. It's such a good score. And very addictive to me, apparently.
I love this. This is amazing.
Yeah. I think it goes to show something that we're all, like, a lot of our Wrapped things are just like, oh, yep, okay, here's a soundtrack that you listen to 100 million times.
I mean, my top Spotify Wrapped artist of the decade was Taylor Swift.
What a surprise.
Anyway, what were you going to say? Yeah. I don't know. I thought you were going to say something, right?
This wasn't really about the score, but like tangentially related to that.
Please.
I think this, like going all the way back to the trailer, I think this was the trailer that like inspired the like sad, slow cover trend.
Yes.
That
yes.
has like
really?
Permeated
this is the
films
one?
Ever since. Yeah, this is mm-hmm. the film. I think there's like a New Yorker article about it or something, about like how this was the film that started that trend, which is absolutely crazy.
That is crazy. And it feels weird to watch this trailer now, because you're like, yeah, I basically know what this is, but you forget that at the time it was like crazy.
I mean, that's what the trailer like left
like
an imprint on my brain. Like
it's
one
it's
of my
like
faves
so groundbreaking.
Of all time. Right? Because even though the sad, slow song is so overdone now, it's just so perfect for this movie.
Yeah, like nothing can compare to like just how well that cover like applies to it. I think like the shock of just like having children swear in that cover as well is just like no one's ever gonna try and replicate that again. Like
it's so good. Do you remember when the trailer came? Because I feel like it was such a big thing on YouTube and everything. Like,
I was very much not online.
I was
too
online.
You were
too
online.
Clearly, I was too online. This is not good or healthy for me. Oh no!
I don't remember. I'm sorry, I do feel like there was a lot of, you know, with the like best of the decade stuff. Besides, like, oh, here are the best films of the decade. Here's what we feel about the 2010s. There was a lot of like most iconic trailers.
Yes.
Of the 2010s, and which I feel this was number one on so many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a? I mean. Not, well, yeah, we
you,
discussed.
You, but. I like very, I like very flashy, very snappy trailers. I don't like, Jordan likes the epic trailers. Like, you always talk about the Man of Steel, like IMAX trailer or like shit like that. I like the super flashy, super poppy stuff. I often
like for Ava.
No, Ava is a terrible trailer. Not even a good song to go with it. You need high quality. I often invoke the Atomic Blonde trailer, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And I think I've said it before, but even though the movie is awful, I think the Suicide Squad trailer is.
Oh my god, I was gonna say the same thing.
Yeah, like, it's so good.
That's a really good trailer.
It's an excellent
trailer. I would say Mad Max.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, Rust. I distinctly remember seeing that trailer for the first time and, like, knowing I was going to be obsessed with this film.
Yes.
And it was true. I am obsessed with it, so.
I mean, film. Really hot take here. I think that's a good movie.
It's a good movie. Another movie that was honestly stiffed of a few too many Oscars, even though it won like five or
won so many.
That was also a huge Oscars year.
That was a good Oscars year. Yeah, that was an exciting Oscars year. See, the thing is that like the 2011 Oscars, I feel like I would be watching them and I would just be getting sadder and sadder.
This one?
With
yes.
everything. Yes. And now it's just unfortunate.
Because this was maybe the first year. I'll have to go back through the Oscars because I did watch the Oscars really early than I probably should have or whatever, but like I remember having seen almost all of these movies, so it was one of the first times when I'd actually gone through and had seen everything. Like I saw Black Swan obviously a little too early than I should have, but like I had seen all these movies and I was like, oh my god, I can like have investment in stock into like what I care about now, which was so nice, because like when you're younger and you watch the Oscars, you're like eight, you're like, oh, I don't know what 90% of these movies outside of animated feature or whatever are. But now it was like that time when I was finally like, oh, yes, I care about these movies winning things so much. I'm going to invest so much of my personality into one night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And of course, now it's like we're just giant nerds.
Losers,
that
yeah.
sit around and like the Oscars are like the Super Bowl.
The greatest
Bowl.
Day of, yeah.
Yeah. Although I feel like I never really understood what people meant about sports, because even though Jordan is a big sports fan of Boston sports, to the surprise
Shocking.
Of nobody, I am not. So I was like, I don't really understand sports. And then as soon as I started watching the Oscars religiously,
like award season
I was
came
like,
around.
I do understand. It's like the heartbreak and like the just the stakes and mm-hmm. live yeah. television.
Or the highs you get when a nice win happens.
The high highs and the low
yeah.
lows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Green Book Parasite double whammy. Oh.
Yeah, I mean
the lowest of lows to the highest of highs.
Yeah.
I was gonna say as well, like the twofer of just like the 20 I can't remember the years. But, like, basically, there was, like, the year that Mad Max was winning everything, and that was just, like, the serotonin boost I needed. But also the year before that, it was Grand Budapest Hotel that was winning everything.
Yes.
And that, like, the feeling is just, like, unparalleled. Just seeing your favorite win everything, I need it.
It's very
when
important.
Grand Budapest won, I remember watching that and being so happy. I was because I was with other people and I was like, guys, do you understand how huge this is? Like, this is such a great movie. And everyone was just like, what the fuck, you little artsy loot? Like, what the fuck is this movie?
Yeah. Those were two films that like swept all of the technical awards that wouldn't usually sweep them. And it was like so exciting. And it was like, oh my God, this is the path to best picture. And then, of course,
and
like neither
yeah.
of them managed to pull it off.
Wes
but...
deserves. I hope he gets something for French Dispatch. Yeah, I haven't even seen, obviously.
So. I know. I'm a little nervous. I gotta tell
I'm
you.
I'm gonna put my chips in early.
Yeah. See, I'm very stingy with my chips, but I do go in for like the weirdest stuff. But like I
like
go
Molly's
all
game.
In. Like
you
Molly's.
Really went so in on Molly's Game.
I like Molly's Game. I don't know what tell you.
We saw it together, and while we were walking out, Brooke just goes, "Best Picture 2017."
First of all, I didn't see it with you, and secondly,
yes, we didn't.
No.
I could have sworn we saw that together.
No, I saw it alone.
Brooke, I think we saw it together.
It came out in 2017. I wasn't even in Los Angeles yet. We weren't good enough friends to see it yet.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive. But we did see Vox Lux together, and I thought that was a masterpiece. And Jordan was like, oh, it was okay. And I was like, no, it's so good. What
I
are you talking
Vox
about?
Lux.
I thought you didn't
what,
like it.
What am I thinking of that we
I
saw
don't
together?
Know, we but
saw
we definitely did.
Did we not see? I'm going to check the dates. We'll find out.
Okay.
We'll report
was it like
back.
Miss Sloan or something.
Oh, I saw that movie alone.
A hit.
Wait, another good movie though. That movie is
wait,
good.
Wait.
Have you even seen it?
No.
It's good, guys.
It's not. It's really not.
I'm not kidding.
It's
I think
just
it's
like
good.
Jessica Chastain, like doing her Jessica Chastain thing. Like,
yes.
We need to stop letting her just like do that same thing. Like, I love her, but please, like, she needs some range.
What would have helped is if she got the win for the Tree of Life, which she should have deserved. And then that would have changed, I think, a lot of things.
Also, if she had won for Zero Dark Thirty, which she didn't.
True.
I think that
she's going to get it for Tammy Faye, probably.
That would be really cool, because I feel like that is range. Tammy Faye is definitely like a stretch for her. So, yeah. I mean, I know that like The Help is a terrible movie, but I actually think that she's very good in that movie. So I'm going to stop talking about Jessica Chastain.
You're a freckle-faced fan.
There's a lot of Jessica Chastain talk in this podcast, despite this being a film that does not include
Jessica Chastain.
Unbelievable.
I mean, like, you know, between Eyes of Tammy Faye and Molly's Game, it's like, she's so tangentially related that we have no choice but to talk about
her. The Eyes of Molly's Game.
Oh, great.
Great.
All right.
So this movie comes out. How much money does it make?
This movie did very well. It
Shocking.
Opened at number one. It opened to a hot $22 million. Domestically, it made $96 million, and worldwide, it made a hot $224 million. So very good. On a production budget of $40 million, a mid-budget movie.
Love
what
to
a
see
concept.
It. Love to see it.
A just Missed really that. Hot $40 million budget.
That's so cool. That's so sexy.
And I think that if it wasn't directed by Fincher, it'd probably be closer to 30 mil, but like you famously have to like extend the shoot and like extend literally everything because he takes so long to shoot everything. But yeah, it did really well. There was some critical
backlash. I mean, we kind of hinted at this in the beginning, but I think when this movie came out, a lot of people were like, oh, like why do we need a Facebook movie? What is the like point of this? And then two, they were like, this is super critical of Mark Zuckerberg. Like, why are we being so negative about this billionaire Silicon Valley fuckboy? And I think it's so interesting, obviously, like now going back to it, how ahead of its time it sort of was in the critique. But at the time, a lot of people, whether that be online or in like real life, were like super condescending and like somewhat apprehensive about like this movie's negativity towards him and painting him sort of in a more dark light than being like the genius who created Facebook, because I think people would have expected it to be like a hailing of this new form of social media, whereas this movie is way more critical of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that obviously like Jesse Eisenberg is a performance for the ages. You want to talk about someone who was defined by like doing a type of performance.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God, forget Jessica Chastain. Like this is...
Bring in Jesse Eisenberg.
This is everything. Yeah.
Jesse's Game.
Yeah, exactly. Like I obviously, he's incredible in this movie. Like it's no question. But I think that because he plays this character so unlikable, I think like that is a really big aspect of it. Like it's not just the script that's doing the work, it's like he's so deeply annoying. And apparently he was like, I had to like basically relearn a lot of tics that I was trying to like keep out of the way that I like acted and talked and everything, that I sort of had to like reintroduce for this character. But I think we can all agree that culturally, the legacy that it has left is overwhelmingly positive. And everyone, you know, on the most part, agrees that this was a very good interpretation of the story.
Yeah.
And a little gay on top of it.
Of
so,
course.
So there you go. All right. Jordan.
Brooke.
Would you like to guess the average Letterboxd rating?
I would. I'm a little nervous for this one because I don't know.
Yeah. Ayana, you can also totally put in a guess if you want to.
Yes, please weigh in.
But it's not required.
I'm going to go ahead.
I have a guess.
Okay.
Oh, okay. 4.3.
Wow. Okay.
I'm going to go with the 4.3. I think that's a little too high.
So I saw this video and this person was like, all the greatest movies of all time have a Letterboxd rating of 3.9. So I think The Social Network is at a 3.9.
Okay. I have good news.
Please
one of you
me,
is correct.
It's her.
Congratulations to Ayana.
Yes.
Oh my God.
That's incredible.
That is a really
that's
interesting.
So good.
That because I feel like that's true.
Yeah.
What's crazy is that like this film has a ton of like 4 stars and a ton of 5 stars. I think all of us rated it five stars on Letterboxd.
Yeah,
but
sure.
it doesn't have a ton of 4.5s is the thing. Is like there's like this weird gap. So I feel like, yeah, I don't know. That's interesting.
How do you watch this and not give it 5 stars?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know a person who does not think this is like the best film ever.
Right?
Right.
It's so weird. Like 3.9 feels like too low for it. Like
I would agree.
It really does feel like it should be a, like a 4.5 or something.
Yeah. Well, this we draw is why, the, yeah,
I was
yeah.
say, this is like the issue that we like, we do this and it's always draws up this conversation on Letterboxd because you're always like, what do the people think? And sometimes you're really just let down right. with what people are giving.
It's
stuff.
Like, it's so much more of a wild card than say like Rotten Tomatoes or something like that, because yeah. like there it's a truly insane sometimes. Yeah. But yeah,
it's so sad.
A 39, slightly too low, but it's okay. Through the power of us rewatching it, slowly we can raise it.
Yes.
But then I guess maybe it won't be considered the greatest movie ever anymore. So maybe we should try to keep it at a 39 to stay in that special, that final club, one might say. The 3.9
so
final
curious
club.
What the other
we gotta
ones...
gatekeep the social network.
We do. No we one else can know.
Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss the social network. Let's go.
Yeah.
What I wonder, did the TikTok have any other 3.9s or was it just like in general? Because I would be so, I now like need to go through my letterbox and just see everyone that's a 3.9 because I feel like that's true.
I think Lady Bird's at a 3.9.
Again, far too what? Low. Like, I believe yeah. it, but like, what the hell? Let's
we'll
see.
We have to find out.
I have
okay.
to.
A live right. like, discussion.
Like, you really just have to look up like a movie you love and it will probably be a 3.9.
Lady Bird is at a 3.9.
Wow.
Oh my god,
that is nuts. That is absolutely crazy. Okay, well, this is a good
wow,
a good theory.
A galaxy brain unlocked.
Hell yeah, it's time we socialed some networks. I mean, there's so many better puns I could
refresh.
Make we're wired in.
Yes.
Let's go around and give our QQ ratings, which is basically just how queer do we think this film is at the end of the day. I actually think we did a pretty good job touching on both like the cultural legacy of that aspect of the film as well as what's hanging out in the text, and we love just like a good breakup movie.
We do,
you know,
nothing better.
I feel like I'm gonna give it, this is probably a little less generous than I would normally go, but I'm gonna give it 3 stars. Mm-hmm. I can see it going higher, but it just feels right in my heart because obviously, I don't think this movie is intended to be a breakup film. And there is, like we mentioned, so much sort of like set window dressing in terms of like, what is it like to be with women? And like, how do we feel about getting women to sleep with us and that kind of stuff? But at the center, like we mentioned, it's all really about Mark and Eduardo. So 3 stars for me. Jordan, what are you feeling?
I'm tapping my keys. Mm-hmm. I'm logging onto Facebook. I'm posting. Remember when Facebook statuses used to be like, it was not just like you could say anything. It was like says or like is. It was like Jordan is. And then you like would have your status or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Were you guys around for that?
Yes.
No.
Was,
yeah.
I do remember that.
What was it? Was it like is? God.
I think it was like is.
Right?
And it would be like, I'd post a status and it'd be like, Ayana is bored, sad face. That was
yes.
like my Facebook status.
Yeah. Doing homework.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
yeah. Oh my
going
god
to school,
eating
yeah.
an apple yeah.
we haven't discussed sorry I will give my score in a sec
yeah
how like I think it's so fascinating I don't know like for our generation like kind of growing up on Facebook and looking at it now like I have not been on Facebook in so long.
No. I never go on it anymore. I have a couple of groups that I am still in that I will check. I think that that is the most useful feature of Facebook that like other social medias don't really have, is like the ability to do like groups.
Lumps.
I almost yeah. use it for like business type stuff more than I do
like the
actual social.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And like, you know, the most of the groups that I'm in are like professional based
right.
things, but I like never scroll my feed anymore. I never recognize anyone on there.
Mm-mm.
And I never post a status unless like something that I'm like, I think my extended family would like to
needs
know about
to see
this.
Yeah.
Like, let's just say the podcast did not make it to the Facebook page. But like when I graduated college, I did this whole
right,
thing where I
right.
was like, thank you so much to everyone who supported. Like, that's like a Facebook post.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like my coming out one on Facebook. And then I was like, all right, see you guys later.
Oh, I didn't do that. So there you go.
The classic. Are you off or on? Like, where are you landing on how much Facebook
I'm very
you do?
Much off Facebook, except if I have, like, professional news, I will share it because what,
yeah.
I like impressing people from school.
Hell yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the
flex
thing.
On them.
It's like Facebook is the place where all of the people that you don't want to talk to anymore are posting the most. So it's
right.
like, I only want to tell
the,
you
yeah, exactly.
when I'm like
home.
Rubbing
yeah.
your face in it. Like,
yeah.
I
yeah.
very much understand
like,
that.
I literally just like share the articles I write. And I was
yeah.
like, I wrote a thing. Enjoy. And then
hell yeah.
my mom will comment being like, It's just, oh my god, my mom's comments are so embarrassing. They're just like, me and like tags like every single member of my family are like, are all so proud of you. You're doing such amazing things. And like she said,
that's like, so I love really her, cute. But, like, that's so cute.
Which like is like such a like a long comment that does not like feel appropriate for a Facebook comment. Like,
yes.
But it's funny. It's funny.
Yes.
That's amazing.
My mom is also quite active on Facebook, but in a good way. It's basically like a bragging
like a parent's
wall where it's like she mostly just posts about whatever my sister and I are doing.
My mom's too.
Exactly.
My mom my mom doesn't have a photo of her on her Facebook. Her profile picture is me and my sister.
That is very similar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The generational divide.
Anyways, sorry.
I think we should leave Facebook in the past. That's all I'm saying. But you know what we shouldn't leave in the past? Jordan's QQ rating.
Wait, I already gave it. No. Okay. I'm going to give it actually a 3.5.
I think that's very fair.
I think that it works both as like a romantic comedy breakup movie and also like a sort of satire on like straight heterosexual men and how they do the most to destroy society. And like, I think it's between like, if you just really just like hone in on Eduardo and Mark, like the way in which they shoot like their lingering glances, sort of the yearning that Eduardo has for Mark to like satisfy him, whether that be like emotionally or like with his finances, and sort of knowing that Mark will sort of manipulate the relationship and do things without asking for his approval until after. So he's like, we're going to need $19,000 more or whatever it is. And he's like, is that okay? And Eduardo's like, yeah, sure. Like, I'll send the funds. And then he's like, oh, I already did it. And it's like, he doesn't yell at him or anything. It's like very much just like a symbiotic relationship that the two have. And obviously, like, you can have two male friends or whatever. Like, that's as we've talked about. But like, there is too much seemingly sort of undercoding subtext to their relationship that I find fascinating. And there is one queer character in the movie, which is like the the Peter Thiel.
Oh, really?
At the end. Yeah, he's out and like is
like
an actual
IRL?
Gay person. Yeah.
Oh. They don't reference that in the film.
But I was just like, because I was just, that was my one thing. I was like curious. I was like, is there anyone actually in this movie who's actually gay? And so I just went through all the IRL people just to see.
That is dedication.
I was curious. We had to do, you know, look, if anything, we do our research.
We definitely
so
do.
So for me, and then also just the standing in the rain shot with him looking for Mark and then opening the door and it's not Mark. I mean, is there anything more breakup like classic tropey?
It's so angsty.
Right.
It's like, it's great.
Come on. Like, you went from there to there and you're that wet, my dude.
Okay.
Anyways, so it's a 3.5 for me.
Ayana, what are you feeling?
I think I'm going to say 3.5 as well.
Woo!
Very
I
nice.
I think this is like borderline like an incel movie, like an incel who's just like really successful, like gets out of his mom's basement and like does something, and just like you said, like the pettiness of straight white men are just like trying to like how much they will like how far they will go just to, like try and sleep with someone, you know, like but there's like a bit in the commentary, basically, you know, like the Apple Teeny scene. And I think like David Fincher, he's like commenting on Andrew's performance and he's like, Andrew's so good here because like his face, it just says that like he's so incredulous at how like this guy, Sean, is who Mark is falling for. And like the word choice of like falling for like really stuck with me. I was like, maybe this is like more intentional than like I first perceived. Like, maybe there is actually like something going on here that like I think like they wanted us to see like the subtext going on here. I think as well there was also, I might be wrong, but I think Andrew Garfield said something about how like he tried to play that the fuck you flip-flop scene as like a breakup scene. So like I think they very like intentionally tried to make it feel like a breakup movie. So I feel like there is something going on there. And yeah, that's my reasoning for my
I think that's great. Yeah. I'm really glad that you mentioned that because I do remember that Andrew Garfield interview where he was like, yeah, you know, I was trying to play it like a breakup. Like, you know, I it was really easy because like I fell in love with Jesse Eisenberg when I first met him, like that kind of stuff. So we love Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield's he's the perfect best.
And this is a perfect movie.
It is.
Perfect movie full of
love it.
Some perfect people and some super canceled people.
Really nice when we can cover a movie that's just really good.
Just a good
nice to watch something that's great.
Love to see it.
Yes.
Okay. Ayana. Anna, thank you so much for being here. We
truly
really
so delighted to have you on.
Yes,
thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. This was really fun.
Oh my god, of course. Is there anything that you would like to
speaking
plug?
Of social media?
Yeah, speaking of social media, speaking of where people should, you know, check out all of the good stuff that you're doing, where can they find you?
Yeah, my Twitter is at Ayana Mare. I write things sometimes for GQ and other places very occasionally. If you look close enough, if you look at Netflix Films Twitter feed, sometimes you're able to discern what's mine.
Every once in a while, I'll be like, I think that's an Ayana tweet. Just like following your personal and following the Netflix
very iconic
account.
Yeah.
So yeah, what I do these days is tweet on two different accounts. Sometimes you'll be able to figure out what's mine.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
And it's a great time.
Tweets good, writing great, all across the board.
Your writing is
a must follow.
Amazing. And yes, it really is a must follow. And you have a great letterbox too, I'll just say.
Oh yeah, that's true. I'm on letterbox as well. That's Ayana Murray as well, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah,
we'll link it in our little description. If you would care to hear us scream further about The Social Network, you can also find us on Twitter. Oof. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. And you can find this podcast on Spotify and Apple and not Facebook podcasts, unless they'll probably be launching it imminently.
Probably, yeah.
But wherever else you get your podcasts, please rate, please review, please give us a follow. Please don't call us bitches on the internet, but you can talk to us on the internet and
yes,
tell us what you think about this movie and what you might like to see us cover next.
Which is?
Next week, we are taking a little skip and a hop back in time to cover 1959's Ben-Hur.
A real skip back in time.
A very long movie that I need to mentally prepare myself to watch, but I'm very excited
Good movie.
For it. We are obviously not covering the remake. So, if you watch along with the podcast, don't even think about watching the remake.
Apologies. 1959 only.
So
very
tune
excited.
In next week for that. It's going to be a good time.
Brooke, is there anything you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I just have one question to ask everybody, which is, fellas, is it gay to get blowjobs in neighboring bathroom stalls? Just a thought.